and another would take my place. For the chance to behold your face. And the day of my life was my dreams of time, as they fall from your golden hand, at the call of the wind's command. Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, February 9th, 2015. Tonight's open forum is being simulcast over two radio programs. One is Shake and Wake Radio, and the other is GMN Broadcasting. If you are listening to us live over those networks and you would like to call in, you can reach us at 605-562-3140. That's 605-562-3140. Maybe we can remember or try to remember to repeat that a couple of times through the evening. The participant code is 385-698. So one more time, 605-562-3140. Participant code 385-698. And we are live on Monday night, 9 p.m. to midnight, Eastern Standard Time. Now, the purpose of our four-minute lead-in song, and we're probably going to have a four- or five-minute lead-out song also, is really so that the radio programs, if they want to have some kind of a lead-in or a lead-out, that they can take that time and just ignore the music and pipe in at the 4 minutes. We are posting whatever song it is that we're going to play up on the Monday Monday evening program. It's called The Weekly Call. Go up to the website, nationallibertyalliance.org, top left side, Weekly Call. If you click on The Weekly Call, you will find that the information concerning how to reach us, the phone numbers. You can also, if you don't want to come in on a phone, you can come in through your browser. All you need is a set of speakers. Of course, if you want to speak, you're going to need a mic. But anyway, if you click on that Monday on Weekly Call tab, you'll get all that information, the phone numbers. Sometimes we get real busy. We get a lot of calls, and we're on prime time, 9 p.m., so very busy across the nation at that time period, maybe 9 to 11, maybe even 9 to midnight. So sometimes these numbers might not work calling in. We do have an emergency number or a backup number. Again, it's on the weekly call page, that secondary number you can call in and the instructions on how to get to us. Or you can click on the telephone to dial using your browser. Your browser will open up with a dialer. You can dial in the number, dial in the code, and you'll be listening right over your browser. So there's three different ways to get through to us, both two by phone and one by browser. We posted the lyrics for the song we played tonight, which was Alan Parsons Project's The Eagle Will Rise Again. It was 4 minutes and 20 seconds long. And again, like I say, every Monday evening we will start with some kind of a musical theme, about 4 minutes long, for whatever identifications the radio programs might want to stick in there, or they can just run these our music along with us. And again, we're going to end the program tonight at exactly 11:55 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We will lead out with another 3 to 5 minute song. And that'll be it for the evening. Okay, so we're not going to repeat this information every Monday. This is the first time we're going to be we're being simulcast by two different radio programs. So we wanted to let everybody know what's going on with that. But we're not going to bring this up again next Monday. Okay, we're going to start off as we always do with the reading of God's Word. We're going to read out of the book of James, chapter 1. We're going to read 18 verses. And we read, James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the children of God, which are scattered abroad, greetings. My brethren, count it all for joy when you fall into various temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave in the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. Let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted, but the rich in that he is made low, because as the flower of the grass he shall pass away. For the sun is no sooner risen with the burning heat, but it withereth the grass, and the flower thereof falleth, and the grace of the fashion of it perisheth. So also shall the rich man fade away in his ways. Blessed is that man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Let no man say, when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lusts, and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Do not err, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and come down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Of his own will beget he us with the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. Okay, that was James chapter 1, verses 1 through 18. Okay, we got a lot of things to cover tonight. We're really starting to get busy. We do need as many volunteers as possible, so if you're not volunteering your time, get a hold of your state coordinator, get a hold of your district coordinator. You can find your district coordinator up on the website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and go to contacts, and then click on, I think, national coordinator in order to find district coordinators. Let's see, general information. Yeah, you'll find your district coordinators. Click on national coordinator. You'll find your district coordinators there. You should make contact with your district coordinator and also your state coordinator. Now, we have asked everyone, all state coordinators, to end, at least for the next 6 weeks, any state meetings. We have district meetings every week. So 3, 4, or 5 states will be getting together, working together in order to get the work done. We have about 7 papers that we have been diligently working on for over the months. We recently completed those papers, so they are completed. We're going to go look at 2 of these papers tonight, and we're going to be filing these 2 papers, I'd say, within the week. We're going to release them a little early. It's important for one of these things, which is an information, to be gotten out as soon as possible. It's very short. It's only a couple pages. And the other one, what we have done is we've taken the paper for the sheriff, which at first we called an information, which we were going to file as an information, and we're also sending the sheriff a copy of this information concerning his power and authority. We decided to turn that into a mandamus. As a matter of fact, we have one information, which, like I said, we're going to read tonight, and we have one mandamus, which is going to the sheriff. We're going to read that tonight. Those are the 2 papers that should be going out within the next 7 days, providing we get enough help to get all the work necessary to get done before next Monday. And we'd like by next Monday is to release another paper. We want to release these papers as soon as possible. We are hopefully, let's say, maybe 6 weeks away. And again, it's up to the people participating. Only the people can save America. Our plan will not work unless the people get behind us, so we need more people. It is true we've got quite a big membership, many thousands, and we have tens of thousands of people that are following us to some degree on the website. But we need much, much more participation. We need the people, but we are, again, we are established. It took us 2 years to get here. We are well established in every state of the union. We have a unified common law grand jury or jury process set up. The administrators are being set up for this process in every state of the union, all 50 states. And, of course, we're still working down into the counties. We are in quite a few counties, but we've got a lot more counties to start filling out. We're kind of hoping at some point we're going to get that that big wave of people coming in soon, now that we're really going to get down to business. We, as I mentioned, we're being rebroadcast off of 2 radio programs. We may have a couple others that are interested, and we'll take on as many as possible. We need to get the word out. People need to get people to this meeting. We need to get the word out to our own membership first and foremost. We've, like I said, we've got a lot of membership. It's up to the state coordinators to start making some phone calls. Let's get these people involved and going forward. This is not going to work, like I said, without the people. On our front page, it says only the people can save America. That's you. Okay, let's read this information. First of all of our papers and every paper we're going to write from this point forward, with the exception of this one information, will be mandamuses. If you go up to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and you can click on media or come down and click on court filing. You will find the 2 papers we're going to read tonight right here. We have the Quo Warranto filed up here that we filed on November 10, 2014. That's available for reading. If you haven't read it, you should read it. Read it numerous times. This is your education. This is the fruits of the work of National Liberty Alliance. National Liberty Alliance, we really are set up as a facilitator of knowledge, of education. We have our free civics course. Everyone should be taking this free civics course. We want to encourage sheriffs to come to our website and take this free civics course. We want to encourage everybody that is an oath taker, marshals, FBI agents, everybody, to come to our website. Of course, they're going to try to put us off as the sovereign citizens. I'm hearing it all the time, but that's not what we are, and it doesn't take long for anybody to read our front page to see who we really are. We are the people trying to bring back the foundation of America, that which we are founded upon. We're founded upon the Declaration of Independence, of course, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And if we can require these servants of ours to obey the law, we'll be in great shape. Now, we don't have a problem with our government. We're not anti-government. We're all for the government. We have three branches of government. We agree with the structure and everything that's set up. The problem is with the criminals who have become elected and have taken control of our political process. That's where the problem is. And they better straighten up soon, otherwise they're going to find themselves in jail. Because there's only one solution to this problem, and that is either they repent and start doing the right thing, or the pressure will mount, and we will get to that point where the pressure will be so great, and we will get back into our courts, and we will take our courts back, and we will take our nation back, and we will take the other two branches of our government back along with the judicial process, and we will put these people in jail. It's up to them what they want to do. And like I said, we have eight papers, and by the end of eight papers, people will understand completely and clearly what it is we're doing, and they'll see the power, the strength, and the authority of what we are doing. But it'll take a little time. It's an education. So this is an education. As I said, you know, we have books, essays, and lectures up on our website. We have put together this website to educate the people, to get the people to that place where they can actually exercise their liberty with knowledge and authority, and to take control of their nation the way it should have been. We've lost our way. It's time to find our way back home. But only the people can save America. And as Thomas Jefferson said, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. You will lose this nation. Your children will become slaves. And liberty will be found no more unless we, the people, step up and do what is necessary to save this nation.
Hey,
every
John?
Paper that we file from this point forward, yep.
Just real quick, I want to let you know when you get to an ending someplace, Pete was unable to get into the board until 9 after. He'd like to just give a one-minute introduction to his people because they're going to hear you talk and he didn't get an announcement so they know what's going on.
Okay.
So at one point, he wants to just announce that we're here. And
okay, why don't we take that moment right now and then I'll pick back up.
I've already unmuted him, so Pete, if you want to go ahead and talk, you have the mic. Take a minute and tell everybody who
you are. Well, thank you. I wanted to, John and Gerard, I wanted to welcome you to, actually we're up and running and streaming, and of course, for our regular listeners on Guerrilla Media Network, I want to welcome National Liberty Alliance to the Guerrilla Media Network. We want to, of course, just like you were saying, John, we want to reach as many people as possible on as many channels as we possibly can. That's why we wanted to open this up to, you know, to share your weekly conference call so that, you know, I mean, this is all about education, obviously. We need to get re-educated, per se, on what's happening in our country. But I wanted to welcome you to Guerrilla Media Network and, of course, let our listeners know each and every Monday you broadcast between 9 p.m. Eastern time until midnight. So welcome to Guerrilla Media Network. And, of course, we love and appreciate everything you guys are doing to, you know, especially educate us on our common law rights and interests.
Okay. Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it. Okay. Let's get back
to
where we left off. And now every paper that we filed, we're filing with what's called a file on demand. It's a one-page paper. So when you read the papers, you will see that it's the first page, and if you look down at the bottom, you'll see the words file on demand, an official extraordinary judicial process. And in any event, it lays out basically the law and the authority by which we act and what these people must do, that they do not have a choice. This is a judicial process, and we will call it treason, aiding and abetting the enemy, for anybody who intercepts this message to the individuals that it's meant to go into. We are filing the action, and it is listed on this paper. I'm just going to go quickly to basically who's being filed and who's being served. We're filing this action under the authority of Article 4, Section 4, which is the guarantee by our government, particularly the judicial process and all branches of government, to guarantee to us a Republican form of government. It is going to the United States Supreme Court, And it is to be forwarded and copied to all nine judges under the penalty of law. The clerk is going to jail at one point. We may not get them right away, but we will get them, and we will put them, these people in jail for aiding and abetting the enemy should they intercept this message to our servants. It is being filed in all United States district courts, again under penalty of law, all judges and all magistrates within those courts. There are 94 districts in the United States of America. It's going to all state courts, again, under the penalty of law. A copy is sent to every judge and every magistrate in America on a state level, all 50 states. It's being served upon the United States Congress, the United States Senate, the all state assemblies, all state senators, all state governors, all county sheriffs, federal special agents in charge. There's one for every federal district, so there's 94 of them. U.S. Marshals, there are 94 of them, one for every federal district, going copy to them, copy to the Joint Chief of Staff, and is going to the state militias. And all is under the process, under the penalty of law, for anyone who intercepts this message to our servants, from we the people. We are all serving, we also serving this under the First Amendment, which is the duty to act, to all of the news medias. I think we have about 800 news medias listed up that we'll be sending out to. Quite a few. I think it's 800 if I recall. But I know we're going to be updating that, and so we're going to have somewhere around that number in news medias we'll be sending out. If they fail to act as far as we're concerned at some point in time, when it's time to go find out who these people are that have been aiding and abetting the enemy, we're going to put them in jail. We at the bottom of this thing, it says this document is not for a private interpretation of any bar attorneys. All oath takers are expected to act accordingly upon their own literal understanding without the poisonous venom of the bar. Okay, so that is the file on demand, and it quotes quite a bit of law, U.S. 18, subsection 2076, which law clerk is to file, and also 1512, which talks about obstruction, impeding the proceedings. These people are liable to go to jail for 20 years under that code alone, just that one code, 20 years, and fined. And I believe we, the people, we're very close to losing our nation. It's going to be an uphill battle only if the people step up to do the job to get it done. It's time to step up. It's time, if you're listening over any radio waves or anything, or you're listening to this as a recording, we do post this on the Monday night page, on a weekly call page. We post all of our open forums. And so you'll be able to get a copy of this. I'll post it immediately after tonight's program, and you can listen to it. But in any event, anybody that's listening, if you haven't been to nationallibertyalliance.org yet, get to nationallibertyalliance.org, sign up, become a member, become involved, take the free civics course. And, of course, if you can support us with $5 a month or more, we'd appreciate it because it's not for free to run what we're running. But in any event, we need the people to get involved. Only the people can save America. Okay, the first paper. This is an information, and it's concerning bills of exchange. We have a lot of unscrupulous people who are really taking advantage. They're opportunists is what they are. They've come amongst us. They've made believe they're us, and we found out as time goes on that they're doing other things and putting our entire work in jeopardy. They're filing things under the fiction of law. For those who aren't familiar, fiction of law, you'll figure it out as we go along. We are training and teaching people of the fiction of law in our civics course. And, of course, the most important thing is to read these papers. I want to tell you, anybody who reads these papers from the quid quo vanto, from that all the way till the last one, which you've already have written, which is eight more, total of nine papers. If you read all those papers, that's a heck of an education. And let me tell you something. It's very extremely important. I suggest reading it straight through without looking at the footnotes first time around. Then go back and read it again and look at those footnotes, because therein is your education, the expression and the explanation and the meaning of words. And it's not difficult. You know, this is not rocket science. This is really just people talk. This is freedom. This is common law. Okay, so this first information is something that we're being forced to do in order to protect ourselves. I'm going to read it. It's only three pages long. And again, We're being forced to file this because there are so many unscrupulous people doing the wrong thing in the name of the common law grand jury, putting we the people in jeopardy, giving them the powers that be, the possibility of really coming out after us in a legal way. But with this paper, we're denying we have any part of this part of a process. But let me read it. Bills of exchange. Now, I'm not going to read the first. There's a paragraph up there that talks about the series of informations and orders and writs that we the people are putting forward. It's repeated on every single one of our papers. And this is directed to all judicial and law enforcement offices. Bills of exchange. The purpose of this information is to alert the U.S. attorney, the judiciary, the U.S. attorneys, U.S. marshals, and county sheriffs concerning dishonorable individuals abusing the judicial process as people under common law for gain in order to advance private agendas and not justice by taking advantage of a lawful awakening of we the people across America to restore our republic. These wrongdoers are opportunists impersonating common law grand juries and or administrators as they use methods of coercion and extortion to obtain property under color of official right. These individuals proceed under the color of law, substituting fiction of law as the law of the land, and thereby write commercial bills of exchange valued up to hundreds of millions of dollars, and then deliver said bills to banks in exchange for value. Claiming oaths of office are commercial instruments to be monetized and drawn from without due process of law. Some filing or threatening to file commercial liens, also upwards of hundreds of millions of dollars, upon judges, prosecutors, and law enforcement in the name of the common law grand juries, administrators, or just in their own name. Extortion at common law, any obsession by color or pretense of right, and particularly and technically the extraction of money of a thing of value either when none at all is due or not so much is due or when it is not yet due. Preston versus Bacon. Distinction. The difference between a statutory grand jury and a common law grand jury is that the latter is authorized by the people and empowered by the Constitution, whereas the former acts without lawful authority under fiction of law, a tool of the court. The power of common law grand juries is in the filing of indictments, presentments, and writs for process and execution by the judiciary. Their authority to write such bills and writs are unfettered, deriving its power from the people themselves, secured by the common law Fifth Amendment. Drawn from the people. Grand jurists are to be chosen arbitrarily from a pool such as voters' rolls, DMV, phone books, or other potential pool sources from within the county or federal district. With rare exceptions, grand juries should be refreshed often, serving no more than 5 to 10 days within a month. It would be a wrongdoing for grand juries or a foreman to be seated indefinitely. If a case is ongoing for a year or so and true bills, writs, and informations written to the same case is required, then it is logical to continue the calling of the same grand jury from time to time until the case is ripe. The common law grand jury recognizes the existing three branches of government at both the federal and state level as the governments of the United States of America. But we also recognize that malviolent servants who facilitated said fiction of law subverted the United States government for gain, and we intend on rooting them out and restoring the common law of the land. Common law grand juries are dependent upon jurisprudence in the courts of law. Enforcement depends upon honorable judges processing such documents as required under law. Failure to perform their oath is punishable under 18 U.S.C. 2071 and 18 U.S.C. 1001. Therefore, failure to act is a criminal offense, whereas the sheriff and the marshals have a duty to bring the offending judges before the common law grand juries for an indictment and due process of law. The unified common law grand juries are filing this information alert in all federal district courts for action by judges, marshals, and sheriffs. And then it's stated and signed by the grand jury, which this paper is probably may not be filed for another week because we still haven't got everything together, but we did want to start sharing this. We want to get it onto the record. It's now on the record, and it's posted on our site. They now know our intention. Now, we wrote a paper concerning the power and the authority of the sheriff. We've sent it to them as basically memos. We've sent it to them as an information. We have not actually posted it with the courts yet, but we're about to. And we decided to take it and create it into a mandamus. There has been some changes made. We speak in here concerning also the power and the authority of the marshals. I personally didn't know too much about the marshals until this week. We've been studying it. We did some research to find out where the authority and the power comes from. And there is an authority. There is a power. It does stem from the people through the Constitution and under the Judiciary Act of 1789. And so a marshal is no different than that of a sheriff, except he works on the federal level. The sheriff, of course, is elected by the people. A marshal is appointed by the President of the United States. Nobody can remove a marshal from his power and authority except the President of the United States. So therefore, he has the authority and the ability. He is the constitutional law enforcement on the federal level. He has the power and the authority and the ability to arrest any judge for violating anyone's unalienable rights. The problem with the marshals and its problems with the sheriffs, and herein is the problem that we have to face and what the job that we have before us, and that is to prime the pump, so to speak, to teach and train these people what the common law is, what the Constitution is. These people have taken oaths, and they are still unable to recognize when a judge is violating the unalienable rights of an individual. When a judge, whether on a federal level or a state level, violates the law by acting under color of law and violating the unalienable right of the person before them, this marshal and this sheriff has the duty to immediately arrest these individuals, these judges. They are removed immediately for bad behavior. Bad behavior is acting under the color of law for gain. The courts are RICO on steroids, and that's what we the people have to fix. And it starts off with an education. If the people don't understand what their job is, if they're unable to recognize the sin, so to speak, the violation, if they're unable to recognize that, then they can't do their job. Well, our job, as we the people, is to teach them. Jefferson spoke about this, that if the people don't know it, teach them. That's what National Liberty Alliance is all about. We're here to train the people. We're here to teach the servants. We're here to facilitate an education, ultimately. So this is what we have to do. Thomas Jefferson said, "I know of no safer depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform the discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional powers." Anybody who is interested in saving America, you have to become educated. You may think you're educated, you're not educated. I thought I was educated, I wasn't educated. When I started reading this stuff, I started to understand. So we have to go back to our founding fathers. We have to go back to the drawing board, so to speak, and revisit the Constitution, revisit the Bill of Rights through the eyes of our founding fathers, and also through the eyes of the United States Supreme Court. They have had some great, great rulings over the past 200 years, superb great rulings, and we use them all the time. Okay, mandamus to the county sheriff to inform for immediate action. County Sheriff. The county sheriff is a constitutional officer elected by the people, bound by oath as guardian of the people's unalienable rights secured by the Constitution. The United States Constitution and its capstone Bill of Rights is the law of the land, and all statutes and state constitutions repugnant to the United States Constitution are null and void. If the sheriff is ignorant of the Constitution, it would stand to reason that he is in violation of his oath, not knowing when judges and politicians violate the law and thereby technically guilty of treason. Sheriffs is the chief executive, administrator, and law enforcement officer. The sheriff is the chief executive and administrative officer of a county chosen by popular election. His principal duties are in aid of a criminal and civil court of record. That's common law courts, by the way. Such as serving processes, summoning juries, executing judgment, holding judicial sales, and the like. He is also the chief conservator of the peace within his territorial jurisdiction. The sheriff, being the chief law enforcement officer, CLEO, the highest peace officer of the entire county in which he was elected to secure the peace and answer to the people. Unlike the state police, who are code enforcement officers serving the state and answering to the governor, or city, town, and village police, who are code enforcement officers serving the corporate municipalities and answering to the commissioners, all have a conflict of interest because they have no constitutional authority or concerns. Even though they've taken oaths, they still are focused in on codes. So they have no constitutional authority or concerns, whereas the sheriff reports directly to the people. And not to corporations. The duties, responsibilities, and authorities of the county sheriff is as a constitutional officer, at a minimum, the same as they were when the state constitutions were originally written. No law, K-N-O-W, or no law, N-O. The duties, responsibilities, and authorities of the sheriffs cannot be dismissed by those in the legislative court and state constitutions. When it comes to enforcing the law, U.S. Constitution, the sheriff, being the chief law enforcement officer, answers to no one, not even the governor. Like any other elected official, the sheriff cannot be removed from office by another elected official. He can only be removed by the people, at the ballot box, or by an indictment or presentment by a grand jury. Therefore, if a governor would like to remove a sheriff, he would need to ask the people. If the sheriff needs to consult a judge or bureaucrat to know when they exceeded their authority, it's no different than consulting with the fox concerning the henhouse. Lysander Spooner, in Trial by Jury, 1852, said, "Any government that is its own judge of it and determines authoritatively for the people what are its own powers over the people is an absolute government, of course. It has all the power that it chooses to exercise. There is no other, or at least no more accurate, definition of despotism than this. On the other hand, any people that judge of and determine authoritatively for the government what are their own liberties against the government, of course, retain all the liberties they wish to enjoy. And this is freedom. At least, it is freedom to them, because although it may be theoretically imperfect, it nevertheless corresponds to their highest notions of freedom. If the sheriff cannot ascertain if the government is violating the right of the people without asking the fox, how can he perform his duties? If a politician, judge, or prosecutor violates the Constitution, it is the duty of the sheriff to call the grand jury and ask the people for an indictment. This is your responsibility. If you seek permission of a prosecutor or judge on any arrest, you shirk your responsibility and authority and thereby violate your oath. No politician can come between you and the people, regardless of what you have been taught. It is the duty of the sheriff to seek an indictment, not the prosecutor. Prosecutors call the grand jury when the state has an issue, but the people's business is the sheriff's business." Constitutional officers versus code enforcement officers. The principal challenge to the sheriff are the code enforcement officers. Codes, which are statutes, that control the behavior of people are repugnant to the Constitution and are therefore null and void. While the sheriff has a duty to uphold the Constitution, this poses a sharp contrast, seeing he must obey the following United States Supreme Court rulings and constitutions in order to uphold his oath. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or forbidding the free exercise thereof, Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech, Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of the press, Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law forbidding the right of the people peacefully to assemble, Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law forbidding the free exercise petition the government for a redress of grievances, Amendment 1. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state shall not be infringed, Amendment 2. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, Amendment 2. The right of the people to secure their persons and houses and papers, effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, Amendment 4. No warrant shall be issued, but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or thing to be seized, Amendment 4. No person shall be held to answer a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury. Amendment 5. I want to read that one again. No person shall be held to answer for a crime unless on a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury. How many people are in jail and never went before a grand jury? No person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. Amendment 5. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Amendment 5. For a crime to exist, there must be an injured party. There can be no sanction or penalty imposed upon one because of the exercise of a constitutional right. Scherer versus Cullen. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and the name of a law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose since it unconstitutionally dates from the time of its enactment. In legal contemplation, it is inoperative as if it had never been passed. Since an unconstitutional law is void and general principles follow that it imposes no duty, it confers no rights, it creates no office, it bestows no power or authority on anyone, it affords no protection and justifies no acts performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing law, indeed, insofar as the statute runs counter to the fundamental laws of the land. Constitution. It is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no court are bound to enforce it. Someone's mic is open, by the way. Every man is independent of all laws except, that was Bonnet versus Valier. Every man is independent of all laws except those prescribed by nature. He is not bound by any institution formed by his fellow men without his consent. Truden versus Neal. Under our system of government, upon the individuality and intelligence of the citizen, the state does not claim to control him or her except as his or her conduct to others, leaving him, her, or her their sole judge as to all that affects himself or herself. Mugler versus Kansas. Statutes that violate the plain and obvious principles of common rights and common reason are null and void. Bennett versus Boggs. The assertion of federal rights when plainly and reasonably made is not to be defeated under the name of local practices. Davis versus Wechsler. States may not impose a charge for the enjoyment of a right granted to the federal constitution. Murdoch versus Pennsylvania. The state cannot diminish rights of the people. Hirono versus California. The claim and exercise of a constitutional right cannot be converted into a crime. Miller versus U.S. There can be no sanction or penalty imposed upon one because of his exercise of constitutional rights. Scherer versus Cullen. The practice of law cannot be licensed by any state. Schwer versus the board. How often have we been told that you have to get a lawyer, you can't represent yourself, or they perform some mental illness thing on you? Why aren't these sheriffs putting these judges in jail? The practice of law is an occupation of common rights. Sims versus Ahearns. Litigants can be assisted by unlicensed laymen during judicial proceedings. Brotherhood of Trainmen versus Virginia. Those things which are considered as inalienable rights with all citizens possessed cannot be licensed, since those acts are held to be a privilege. City of Chicago versus Collins. The right of the citizen to travel upon the private highways and to transport his property therein, either by carriage or by automobile, is not a mere privilege where a city may forbid or permit it at will, but a common right which he has under the right of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Thompson versus Smith. Constitutional rights would be of little value if they could be indirectly denied. Goldmillion versus Lightfoot. We find it intolerable that one constitutional right should have to be surrendered in order to assert another. Simmons versus the U.S. Where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Miranda versus Arizona. If the state converts a liberty into a privilege, the citizen can engage in that right with impunity. Shuttlesworth versus Bingaman. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to the law, for it is the author and the source of that law. But in the system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the law is the definition and delimitation of power. For the very idea that a man may be compelled to hold his life, or the means of living, or any material right essential to the enjoyment of life at the mere will of another seems to be intolerable in any country where freedom prevails as being the essence of slavery itself. Yick versus Hopkins. The county jail. The sheriff is responsible for the lawful implementation of the county correctional facility and is therefore liable for any unlawful detention. Simply stated, an unlawful detention would be anyone held without a presentment or an indictment by a grand jury, unless for a violent being held for indictment for a grand jury, and then brought before the court of law to answer. This is their unalienable right protected by the Fifth Amendment. Towns, villages, cities, courts, and are not courts of law, because they proceed according to codes and statutes, not constitutions, and without indictments, and therefore violates due process, having no power to fine or imprison. Fifth Amendment, we'll read it one more time. No person shall be held to answer for a crime unless on a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law. Due course of law, this phrase is synonymous with due process of law, or law of the land, and means law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice, that's common law courts. But and the tribunal is the people, it's always the people. The judges don't get a chance to make a decision in a common law court. That's the duty of the jury, that's the duty of the people. And
hey,
nobody
John,
could,
is this paper posted on the site yet or no?
All these papers, I think I mentioned it, is posted under Media. You can click on Media or click on Court Filings underneath Media, and that page you'll find these two papers posted there.
Yeah, in case people want to read along, right? Okay, thanks.
U.S. Marshal. I just added this in the other day. I don't know whether you've even seen this, Gerard, yet. I'll have to run it by you guys and a few others to see, but this is a paragraph that hasn't really been checked yet. U.S. Marshals. The power, authority, and the duty of a U.S. Marshal is similar to that of the county sheriff, in that he is a constitutional officer having the power and the authorities to arrest judges that violate the unalienable rights of the people. One marshal is appointed for each of the 94 federal districts by the president. The marshal's powers are defined by constitutional authority under the Judiciary Act of 1789. He serves for a term of 4 years, takes an oath of office, has the power to appoint deputies, shall produce a bond, and is removable by the president alone. His duties are to attend the district and circuit courts, execute throughout the districts all lawful precepts directed to him, deliver writs, summons jurors, and secure an impartial trial. Execute warrants and is responsible for retaining, delivering, and transporting prisoners in his custody as directed by the courts. State of emergency. It is the sheriff's job to maintain order and peace in their county in a state of emergency, not the federal government and certainly not the armed forces. Nor does the federal government have the authority to declare martial law in the sovereign states of America. Martial law has only been applied in occupied countries in order to subvert the will of the people. The sheriff has the authority to call the militia, we the people, to assist him in extraordinary circumstances called posse comitatus. The county belongs to the people, and in an emergency, we, the people, are to come together under the sheriff to secure our county, not hand it over to foreign powers. He can commandeer entire police forces within his county. Posse comitatus, the power of the force of the county, the entire population of the county above the age of 15, which a sheriff may summons to his assistance in certain cases, as to aid him in keeping the peace and pursuing and arresting felons. The Bill of Rights, Amendment 2, states a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state shall not be infringed. Therefore, the sheriff being chief executive administrator, chief law enforcement officer, and highest peace officer in the entire county in which he was elected, has the absolute authority to arrest even the governor or judge and then call the grand jury directly for an indictment. He needs not go to the permission of a district attorney. America runs on fiction of law. Fiction of law, something known to be false, is assumed to be true. Ryan versus Motor Credit Company. That statute, which would deprive a citizen of a right of a person of property without a regular trial according to the course of the usage of common law, would not be the law of the land. Hoax versus Henderson. Our elected servants are out of control, and America is operating under fiction of law. It is the duty of the sheriff, working with the people, if necessary, to protect the unalienable rights of the people by simply enforcing the aforesaid laws, and only then will America run on the law again. Only the people can save America, and it is the sheriff's duty to lawfully protect and serve the people. Educate and inform the whole mass of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of liberty. Thomas Jefferson. I know no safer depository of the ultimate powers of society but the people themselves, and if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true correctiveness of abuses of constitutional powers. Thomas Jefferson. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible. Let me repeat this again. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated. We, the people, need to become educated. NationalLibertyAlliance.org. Take the civics course. Read the books, the essays, listen to the lectures, and get educated. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that a nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Thomas Jefferson. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, expects it never was and never will be. Thomas Jefferson. The power of the grand jury. In a stunning 6-3 decision, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, confirmed that the American grand jury is neither part of the judicial, executive, nor legislative branches of government, but instead belongs to the people. It is, in effect, a fourth branch of government, governed and administrated to directly by and on behalf of the American people, and its authority emanates from the Bill of Rights, United States versus Williams. Conclusion, the lawful path. The sheriff is the people's last line of defense. The American sheriff must educate themselves of the aforesaid duties and work with the awakened people across America to enforce the law and arrest and indictments. Only then can we save America from the tyrants that are destroying our American life, our American way of life, replacing law with fiction. Wherefore, the unified common law grand jury, stewards of the common law on behalf of the people and in the interests of judges, justice, ordered all federal agents, FBI, U.S. Marshals, state, city, town, village, code enforcement officers are subservient to the county sheriff. Being the only elected law enforcement officer, he is the chief law enforcement officer and highest peace officer of the entire county in which he was elected to secure the peace. In all emergencies and in a state of an emergency, the sheriff, again, is the CLEO with the power of posse comitatus. To resist the power of the sheriff during a state of emergency is to resist the people and therefore an act of sedition. Ordered, all sheriffs in a state of an emergency shall perform their sworn duties to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution for the United States of America, protect the people of the county, private property, and all assets of the county. The sheriff alone is responsible to maintain law and order in the county and to work with other county sheriffs across the states and across the nation to do the same. If the sheriff permits the suspension of the United States Constitution in his county, liberty will be lost forever, and he too then wars against the people. Ordered. All sheriffs are to request free copies of the Constitution and common law handbooks from the Unified Common Law Grand Juries in your state. All sheriffs and deputies are to take a free civics course at NationalLibertyAlliance.org. Read and study all future informations, orders, and writs copied by the common law grand juries. Our founding fathers wrote in plain language for the people. There is no private interpretation to be had. It simply says what it says. Read it and obey it. If anyone needs to be expert on the Constitution, it is the sheriff. Special considerations. Connecticut Constitution Section 25 requires the election of a sheriff every 4 years. Legislators had no authority to abolish the sheriff. Therefore, until the law and thereby the sheriff is reinstated, state marshals are responsible to protect the Constitution above any order given by an elected official. The office of sheriff never existed in Alaska. Therefore, until constitutional offices can be established in Alaska, state troopers ought to keep the duty of the sheriff as law enforcer, not code enforcer, and are also responsible to protect the Constitution above any order given by any elected official. Ordered, legislators of Connecticut State and Alaska State are to remedy the elected sheriff's predicament immediately. Dated, grand jury signature, entitled Mandamus of the County Sheriff, 7 pages, Stewards of the Constitution. And that ends that paper. So these two papers are going to be filed very, very soon, sooner, hopefully, than later. We hope to do it within a week. We're still gathering information. This is being delivered physically by mail. It is being delivered by email and fax. There will be no excuse that they have not received it. They'll never be able to say they didn't receive it. And you know, one person talks to another. The reason why we are filing it in all 94 federal districts and every state court in America is because of the widespread expungement of paperwork of we the people. And we've had it. We're not going to tolerate it no more. We can only do this with the people's help. It's time to step up. It's time to stand up. It's time to get involved. It's time to call your district coordinator and your state coordinator. Say to them, what can I do to help? It's time to, you know, set up $5 a month to us. If you can't do a credit card or a debit card, send us, you know, $60 a year or whatever it is. Or if you can send us more a month, that's fine. But $5 a month, I think, is what, $60? It's 12. Yeah, I think it's $60. So anyway, let's get it done. Okay, we're about ready to go to conversations.
I want to comment on this paper just a little bit. I mean, it was long. You read it all. Yeah. People should go to the site. And they should read it, because I know, you know, you blank out after a little while, you don't listen. But look, one of the most important things is the state of emergency, where it talks about it's the sheriff's job to maintain order and peace in the county. That whole paragraph there about that's the sheriff's job. Pete asked me about doing something on a local level to protect the internet, like a resolution that the towns can pass. And we used to do this when I was in town government, because if you get all, let's say there's 14 towns in this county. If all 14 towns pass a resolution, that's a very powerful message to the state and the federal government. That means the people just have spoken. I couldn't think of anything with the internet, because it's an international problem. It's a First Amendment right. I don't know what the towns could do to enforce that. However, this state of emergency with the sheriff, if anybody is on a town board or is in politics or government and they want to do a grassroots things, and you can hand out the MLA cards, but you should go and get a resolution passed that said, in the event of an emergency or martial law, regardless of what their NIMS training said, which is a national preparedness disaster course that they make all sheriffs, all supervisors, all councilmen take. And it's not a bad course as far as what they're telling you what to do, except for they got you handing off your authority as the thing ratchets up. And that's a bad thing, because eventually you end up with a federal guy running your local stuff. Look, at that federal guy doesn't know where your resources are or what should be done with them. He's going to be handing them off downstate or someplace else. The towns have to take control of their own resources, and they have to pass resolutions that said, look, at in a national emergency, we will be under the sheriff. And you have to put that out there. And what we're doing with National Liberty Alliance is we're taking that up on a national level. We're taking it into the federal courts. But you people got to cement it in your towns, too, because that's where you're going to fight them, too, when they come in. Depending on how fast things go, each little town has to say, oh, no, we already got a resolution on this. So now I'm giving you a proactive thing that you can do in your counties. You need to do it, because time is short. I don't want to get long-winded. I know we got questions and stuff, but these papers that we write, if you go in them, there's many, many important sections that you can pull out, and any one of them you can fly on a banner and you can help do. You can go see your sheriff. You can cement this in your local counties and your towns, and I strongly suggest that you do that, because we can't just be looking at the federal government. We have to be taking back our local government. And this is the way that you do it. So with that, I'm going to yield the floor.
Okay, thank you, Gerard. Okay, I only got a few other things just to cover, and then we're going to move to open conversation here. I got four questions that came through the email. By the way, anybody who would like to ask a question through the email, we'll try to ask them a few in every hour as we go through our program until we get through them all. Right now we got four questions, but anybody who wants to do that next week, they can send it to questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Okay, here's a message from Maureen from Florida. Question. My question is, how do you briefly respond to people when they are ignorant and totally misinformed? I recently had an encounter with a man who responded referring to the common law grand jury as, oh, that's a sovereign citizen's nonsense. Not easy to undo the brainwashing swallowed as truth the past 100 years. Seems people will more willingly believe the oppressors in place of truth. And that is true, unfortunately. Look, at the sun doesn't shine on the entire earth at the same time. Okay, so everybody's not going to get it. Don't waste your time on people that's not going to get it. You can try to give them and feed them a little information. We have on our front page, it is clear, we have a disclaimer. We are not part of the sovereign citizens movement. We do not endorse and entertain the fiction, such as bills of exchange, redeeming and or discharging through trusts, accounts, nor do we involve ourselves with contracts, commercial liens, and the exchanging of an oath of office for a value. The power of the grand jury is to write true bills of indictment, true bills of presentments, and true bills of information, period. So right on our front page in the very beginning, we make that point. And if they read our front page, you'll see we don't use the language of the quote-unquote sovereign citizens. Now, it is true that we are citizens, and it is true we're sovereign. This is something that the enemy has used, and a matter of fact, we have a paper coming up on this which will really clarify this. But that's coming in the near future. Paper has been written, and it'll be more specific then. Okay, Terry from Colorado asks, can we freely distribute the Supreme Court writ of quo warranto? Absolutely. Should I go to my local county clerk and try to find the writ of quo warranto they received? You're not going to find it at the county clerk, but you might find it at the court clerk. Can we post this writ on Facebook? Absolutely. Post it everywhere and anywhere. Send it to your sheriff. Send a copy. Say, hey, I got a copy of this mandamus for the sheriff. Did you get this? I'd like to give you a copy. Send it to everybody, especially your sheriff. Can I begin telling my friends? Absolutely. Can I attempt to file this with my local county clerk and serve a copy to each clerk and judge in my county? Absolutely. Can I send a copy to a mass media? Absolutely. We need to get this everywhere. Okay, a guy named Pete writes, the problem is quite simple. National Liberty Alliance and John Durash will not get anywhere because they have no standing in any of the private corporate courts as the of the American Bar Association. I said private corporate courts, common law does not work in these courts. John, you're way behind here. You refuse to listen to common sense. You refuse to see the issues. You have no standing in any court. They will never hear your cases. So get your head out of whatever and your ears and blah, blah, blah about the courts you were dealing with before they grow tired of you, send you to prison for a very long time. The grand jury process does not work. It's just more patriot guru crap. Okay, anyway, I'm sorry Pete feels that way, but he's absolutely right. We don't have any standing in their courts. If we're arguing standing in their courts, then we're in the wrong court and we're arguing in the wrong jurisdiction, and by arguing standing, we give them jurisdiction. These are our courts. They are created by our Constitution and also by our code, by the authority of our Constitution. Legislators have been given the authority to write the code. And if the code is clear, the Constitution is clear, and you will find it nowhere else other than that every federal district court is a court of record, period, end of subject. They are nothing short of that. As a matter of fact, I think we just wrote this up on the media page. Let me go quickly take a quick look. Let's see.
Really, he should study the court of record on our site, and he would understand the difference.
Absolutely.
He doesn't know what a court of record is. That's why he's talking like that, because he hasn't educated himself. So
We just wrote this up on our paper where you can see all these papers. The word district court of the United States commonly described constitutional courts created under Article 3 of the Constitution, not the legislative courts, which have long been the courts of the territories, and that's McKinney versus the United States. So, you see, they have taken all of our federal courts and they're claiming them to be territorial courts, and they are not. They were created by the Constitution. There are 94 districts that have been created by the Constitution and by acts of Congress under the authority of the Constitution, and so therefore that's what they are. U.S. 28 Code, 28 U.S.C. 132, creation and composition of district courts. There shall be in each judicial district a district court, which shall be a court of record. A court of record is a common law court, which shall be a court of record known as the United States District Court for the district. And this is exactly what they are called. They are called United States District Courts, and they're for the district. They are courts of record. And when we go into those courts, there's a game they're playing, and we're going to reveal that game on one of the upcoming papers concerning the Judiciary Act of 1789. And we're going to talk in very great detail. And, you know, again, our writing is progressive, for lack of a better word, I'm going to use that word. Our writing is progressive. We're really trying to educate. It's a stepping stone. There are prerequisites. Read the papers. Become educated. Get it to the sheriffs. Let's get them out to everybody. Get involved with your state leadership. Become your state leadership. We need leaders everywhere throughout the nation here. A court of record, a judicial tribunal having attributes and exercising functions independently of the person of the magistrate, designed generally to hold it. Proceeding according to the course of common law, Jones versus Jones. That's what a court of record is. One other, the decision of a superior court may only be challenged in a court of appeal. The decision of an inferior court is subject to collateral attack. In other words, in a superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly, rather than resort to the appeal or to the appellate court. Decision of a court of record may not be appealed. It is binding on all other courts. However, no statutory or constitutional court, whether it be an appellate or Supreme Court, can second-guess the judgment of a court of record. The United States Supreme Court cannot overrule we the people as the common law grand jury or the petit juries that rule in the courts. They cannot second guess us. They cannot overturn our decision. They are below us, and they are susceptible to collateral attack from us directly and be removed from office for bad behavior. Bad behavior is acting under the color of law. And doing, of course, violating people's unalienable rights. So let me get back here. However, no statutory or constitutional court, whether it be an appellate or Supreme Court, can second-guess the judgment of a court of record. The judgment of a court of record, whose jurisdiction is final, is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on this court as it is on other court. It puts an end to the inquiry concerning the fact by deciding it. Ex parte Watkins, 3 Peter. Okay, also this is quoted in Shackenloth versus Bustamonath. So that's the power of the court we're talking about. We are not, let me read this. This is also on our page here. We are not filing court cases. And if we are filing papers in every court of the nation. Let me repeat that. Every judicial court that is a court of record, we are filing in every single one of them. We are not filing cases. We are filing papers. We are filing orders. We the people are the tribunals, our tribunal. Our writs are the trial. We are setting our jurisdiction in our courts as per the Constitution, Article 3, Article 4, and Article 6. When enough people are behind us, they will not be able to hold us back. The key to what we're doing, we are at the precipice. We are at the place. We worked 2 years to get to this point. We are there. We are writing papers, papers of authority, papers of orders, mandamuses, writs of quo warranto. It all has a power. It has authority. It has substance. And has the power to take this nation back as long as the people get behind it. The question is, do you, the people, want to save this nation or not? Are you going to get behind this movement? Are you going to step up and be counted? Are you going to put a few dollars, your money, behind us? Are you going to put your time behind us? Do you want a free America for your children? That is the question. And tonight is the moment of decision. It is your duty to do the right thing. Okay, I think I have one other question here. This comes from, Robert. I'm not sure where he's from. It doesn't matter. Okay. Every time I send forward one of these emails, I get a complaint from your office to remove some address or other. Okay. When anybody ever sends me an email, my email, I have it set up so that it sends an automatic response when a message is received. It says, I received your email. This email address, john@nationallibertyalliance.org, is for communications. If you're communicating something to me, don't make it long because I haven't got time to read anything long. Short. Get it to me on Mondays. Let's talk it here. But, you know, if you got to get some information to me, send it to me. Keep it short. If it's long-winded, I'm not reading it. I don't have the time. But it's only for communications only. If you have me on an email list or you are sending me advertisements, please remove me. So if you have an email list and you're sending out videos every single day to 1,000 people or 30 people and you have me on that list, I'm asking you to remove me from that list. I don't have time to look at your videos or any of those things to get all this information that you want to share with everybody. Don't put me on that list. I'm too busy. That's all I'm saying with my email. I'm telling you that if you're soliciting me to join some MLM or something here or something there, take me off that list. I don't have time for that. But if you have a serious question or a comment or a thought that you think I need to know, by all means, communicate with me at john@nationallibertyalliance.org. But you will get that automatic response saying, take me off your list if you have me on a list. I just can't read it. I can't read all this stuff. So anyway, I think that's my final, a couple other final points, and then we'll move on. We'll open up the phones. Let's keep our conversations on point, everybody. We are only taking one question or one comment for discussion from each individual. You are more than welcome to get back into the queue and come up a second time and so on. But we want to make the room for other people to call and talk and ask questions. So one question or one comment for discussion per person. Another thing, we get this from time to time. We recently had it again. Public letters of anger. Someone writes something to someone, they take it the wrong way, they get all upset, they start a big bickering, and they seem to have to tell everybody in the world about it, so they start to copy 1,000 people to it, and before you know it, look at you're breeding discord among brethren. It's wrong. You can't do it. That's not honorable. If you got something against a brother, against somebody, go talk to them. You don't need an audience to talk to somebody. Just go talk to them. Okay? But leave your anger at home to begin with. Don't get all your feathers ruffled, and certainly do not start getting everybody involved in your anger and your venom. We don't want to hear it. This is not what we're about. We're supposed to be honorable, supposed to be just, supposed to be merciful. Let's be humble to each other. No venom, please. Okay, no public
hey,
anger.
John, can we bring Eric from New York in about the court watchers? He's got something urgent for tomorrow.
In just a couple of minutes, okay? Okay, military enforcement. Listen, people, you're not thinking. Anybody who thinks that military enforcement is going to solve our problem, they have no clue what's going on in this nation. Look at, they claim we're already under martial law. We're already under military control, so they claim. What military control are we under? Obama's military control? At the moment, it's Obama's. If you think that the military, let me tell you, when the military gets up and goes in and arrests the president, plan on this. That's a play to begin with. You just saw a coup take place, and America is lost forever. We are under martial law, which is military law. All three branches of government are shut down, and some high-ranking general is going to make up the decision on who goes to jail and who doesn't, who gets killed and who does. It's a coup. We do not have a military problem.
Especially since Obama fired all the good generals.
That's right. We don't have good generals in there anymore.
Yeah, the military's not our hero right now. Not to say that there's not good people in the military, but anyway.
This is a law enforcement problem. It is not a military problem. As a matter of fact, we will be telling the military to stand down. Under an emergency situation, go to the borders, protect our borders. That's your job. Stay off the land. because the land belongs to the militia if that's necessary. But we're going to do this in a way through the courts and through the pressures of the courts, through the judicial processes that are existing and in place, and we're going to take our republic back. We're going to take our nation back. We're going to bring America back and give it back to our children again. Unless you don't want to do that. If you don't want to do that, continue to do exactly what you're doing. Just listen to it and listen to what we have to say and don't get involved. Don't participate. Don't join up. Don't support us. Just sit back there and let the other guy do it. If that's what you want, then that's, I can't save America. No one person can. 1,000 people can't save America. We need thousands, plural. Either we're going to get off our tired rear ends and save this nation, or we're not. It's up to you. Time to move. Enough already. Let's get forward. Let's do it. Okay. So military enforcement is not the answer. Trust me, if that's happening, anybody who thinks that the military is going to go in and arrest the president and bring things back to the way it be, I have a bridge in Brooklyn for you. Okay? Okay, I guess that brings me to an end. Do you have anything to say before we move over to Eric, Gerard?
No, except for I do have a question out of Shake and Wake, but let's bring Eric in, and then I'll address that, and you can open the queue up and get people in there.
Okay. Yeah, meanwhile, Eric, I'm going to, before we go to Eric, I'm going to open the queue now. I'm going to move into the queue mode. Let's keep it focused. Let's keep it on point. We're not going to tolerate any nonsense. We will be very careful to try to take hard questions. If someone has a hard questions, we're all for that. So, okay, I'm going to go to queue. Get in *6, *1, I believe it is, to get into the queue. Eric, you got it. Is Eric unmuted?
He was, but I think he got muted again. And I lost him. Hang on, I got to find him.
Yeah, because I just hit the queue, so.
Yeah, and I
get into the queue real quick.
Yeah, we'll open you up first.
Yeah, let me clear the queue. Eric. Let Eric get into the queue. Nobody get into the queue till Eric gets there. *6, Eric. *1. I don't see him.
He's here. It's
okay, I see Eric. Anybody wants to get into the queue now, you're welcome into the queue. We got Eric. Let's take Eric as the first questioner. You ready? Go ahead.
Go ahead,
Very
Eric.
Very good. Am I coming through now, you guys?
Yep.
Sounds
excellent.
Good.
Excellent. Greetings, everybody. Excellent conference call so far, John. My name is Eric. I'm the director of the Courtroom Observers Group of the National Liberty Alliance. We are a group of people who help each other when it comes time to go to court, long and short. If somebody has a problem in your area, we encourage everybody to get to that courthouse and observe with your camera and a pen and paper. And there's ways to get cameras in the courtroom. If you have resistance, those are all posted up on the Courtroom Observers bulletin board under protocols. So if you go there, there's ways we can get everything done into the courtroom that we need to do. And I would urge everybody listening to this call right now, get over to the Courtroom Observers group, join up, become a member. You have to join the National Liberty Alliance first, and then log in, and you will be able to access, you will be able to join the Courtroom Observers. You'll be able to access a request form if you ever have an issue or a problem and you need observers for yourself. So it's a two-way street. We ask people to give, and as much as possible, be observers, and then, of course, you will receive observers. We had 7 people show up for Steve in Utah, 7 or 8 or more show up for Richard Reinheimer in Maryland. We've had excellent results. A very good success was that the judge in the Richard Reinheimer's case ruled that his challenge to the jurisdiction was an ongoing argument. That's a big deal because that leaves the door open for further jurisdictional challenge. And I know we usually don't like to pester that route, but that is a sign of victory in our favor. So it's good to have observers there. The court respects it. It puts them on notice they're being watched. They don't like the cameras because it records the corruption. It records every judge in the country violating their oath under Article 6, Clause 3. Judicial officers shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. And every judge is getting up every night and day and breaking their oath to support the Constitution by violating it. So the cameras are your friend. We encourage everybody to get involved as a courtroom observer. If you're a member of the NLA, you should also be a courtroom observer, and that really helps. You can go into court with a really good case and lose if you don't have enough observers, because the courts are that corrupt. And you can go in with a crappy case often and win if you can get some people into that courtroom with cameras. So here's my red alert, my plea for observers for our friend John. He's a new member to the NLA, so this is very much last-minute notice, and I encourage people to not wait till the last minute, but this is the case in this situation. And we have a call for observers at the Monroe County Courthouse, which is in Rochester, New York, at the corner of at the four corners of downtown Rochester. And it's on the fourth floor in the courtroom of Judge Doyle. And very interesting in this case, no one can show the promissory note or the ownership of mortgage on his property. The judge even issued a written ruling saying he would not fine for the bank if they did not send their lawyers in to show up. The bank failed to send its lawyers in to show up three times in a row, and the judge still found in favor of the bank. They can't show the promissory note. They don't own the property. Just to give you an idea of the fraud that's going on and why we so desperately need observers there to help John tomorrow at 1 o'clock in the afternoon at the fourth floor, Judge Doyle, Monroe County Courthouse. And that's about the only thing on the docket right now, John. It's been otherwise pretty quiet. I think the system often sees an NLA member and tends to shy away because we're coming with observers, we're coming with cameras, we're coming with Quantos, and we're in with you guys doing the legal and lawful work and us doing the activist work with the cameras. We can really put a pinch and return these courts back to a common law situation. So anybody that can show up tomorrow at 1 o'clock would be great, and please do get involved with Courtroom Observers Group, and I'll turn it back over to you, John.
All right. Thank you, Eric. And by the way, we also have, once you join in on nationallibertyalliance.org and you log in, you go under groups. There's also the media campaign group. There's a lot of work going on there. We're trying to get the word out into the media. If anybody wants to, we're doing Twitter, Facebook, everything. We're also trying to get the newspapers, YouTube, and so on. Just all kinds of different ideas. Everybody needs to get involved. We need to get the word out. We need the Oath Keepers. We are ready now. Look, you got to get the Oath Keepers out to our pages. They need to read our front page, watch the videos on the front page. Then they need to go to our media tab, highlight media, and click on court filings. Have them read the papers we wrote today, the power and the authority of the sheriff. Have them read the papers that we wrote, the Quo Warranto. They need to see this stuff because they don't really know who we are. They're getting a lot of false BS from people who are really the enemy, and they're believing it. We are the people, and they should become part of us. They could be an Oath Keeper. Look at whatever it is you're doing, keep doing it. If you're an Oath Keeper and you're involved with the Oath Keepers, keep doing that stuff. But you should still be signed up with us, and you should be there for the little time or a lot of time you can give us. You should be supporting us, and when it's time to stand up to take America back, you should be there. All the Oath Keepers should be with us. So let's get the word out to the Oath Keepers. Any news media, let's get out to the news people, media. Join these two groups, get involved, and of course get involved on a Monday night. These Monday night calls are extremely important. We fill you in on what's going on. We bring up all the new stuff, and we'll open up for conversation in a few. Gerard, anything before we move on?
Yeah, I just want to take this one question out of Shake and Wake, and it's from Jay Patriot. And it says, so once we get everybody noticed via mail and fax and Quoranto, how will we communicate on the day it all goes down? Well, I don't know what you're talking about, what goes down. You know, when our paperwork is leading to what do you want to call it?
A landslide movement of Oath Keepers. I mean, Oath Takers.
And listen, that's when the people will enforce themselves into the courts. Our communication will be fine at that point. If our communication goes down, that means we're under martial law. You better have a ham radio or something like that. We're telling people to buy ham radios.
And the sheriff better know what to do about that, too.
Over here in New York, I don't know if it's all, I think it's all in New York now, they have installed ham radios in all the communication centers, which is a great thing because that means, you know, ham radio is for the people, and it's non-commercial, And look, if your law enforcement has to resort to ham radio to get through because communication's down, what that does is it puts them out there where the people can hear what's going on, i.e. the militia. It's a very good thing. And I'm surprised they did it. I'm surprised that, you know, and they knew in 9/11 that was the only thing that got through was ham radio. So if you want communication and you're thinking about emergency, think ham radio. So anyway, that's the best I can answer that because I don't know what else you're talking about. So let's go ahead to the queue now, John.
Okay, let's take Bert from PA. You got the mic. Go right ahead. Well, let me click that again. Hang on a second. Bert from PA, you got the mic.
How does the county sheriff have so much power if he's never mentioned in the Constitution? How do you get from the Constitution to the sheriff?
Well, that's a good question, because the county sheriff goes back all the way to 1215 and before. 1215 Magna Carta had the sheriff and talked about the sheriff. And we have sheriff deep in our history through common law. Common law cannot exist without a common law enforcement agent. The sheriff has been here before the Constitution was. It was already established in the counties. As the counties were being established across America, the sheriff was established for the Constitution, before the Constitution, in order to keep common law. The sheriff is the guy that makes the arrest. He's elected by the people, and so therefore he serves the people directly. There is no political strings on this guy. He answers to the people, so he wants to do the will of the people. He is the guy that when someone is arrested, he's the guy that calls the grand jury. It's not the prosecutor, although today the prosecutor calls the grand jury, but he's the one that calls the grand jury. So the grand jury is called by the sheriff. He's the constitutional officer. He is the only officer of law enforcement other than marshal. The marshal also takes an oath, but it's a different kind of oath. But nevertheless, he is focused in on the law of the land, so he's a constitutional officer too, one for the federal level and one for the county level. Now, the sheriff has his authority basically through the state. It's not a federal level. Remember, the federal level created the U.S. Marshal. They did not create the sheriff. Every constitution that I'm aware of has a clause in there for the sheriff. If you read New York Constitution, you will find that the sheriff must be elected every 4 years. It says that the legislature has the authority to set it up for the sheriff to be elected every 2 or 4 years. And in New York, it's 4 years. In Connecticut, where there is no sheriff, right in the state constitution, it says that the sheriff shall be elected every 4 years. So they had no authority to get rid of the sheriff in Connecticut. This is true in every state. This is a state issue. This is a people issue. This is a county issue. This is where the rubber meets the road. And the United States Supreme Court, as a matter of fact, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority of this case, spoke of the sheriff, calling him the chief officer and the highest-ranking peace officer of the nation in the county. He gets, in a state of emergency, he is the guy. He's the boss. And that's what the United States Supreme Court says.
And let's not forget Sheriff
Matt. County, if the Fed comes into that county, they got to go see the sheriff before they perform any action in that county. And the sheriff's got to be behind them and give them the authority and say, hey, forget about it, guys. You're not going to come in and violate my people's unalienable rights. You're coming in here with something that is unconstitutional. Take a hike and get out of my county now. That's the authority of the sheriff. This sheriff needs to understand this power and authority. So that's the power of the sheriff. We do have a paper that we wrote. And if you read the paper to the sheriff, if you read the paper that we just wrote and read tonight, we have a lot of authorities that we have in there concerning the sheriff and his power. And we have a lot of footnotes that we didn't read that gives more authority of where this sheriff comes from. We also wrote a paper of the history of the sheriff and where he comes from. There is no common law without a sheriff. The sheriff is a requirement and also is the grand jury and a trial jury. Those are the three major things that make up common law. The sheriff, or the coroner, the sheriff, the grand jury, and the trial jury. Four things. Without any, you take any one of them out, and you lose it. You lose common law.
Yeah. don't forget that Sheriff Mack won the case against the Brady Bill. The Supreme Court said that he was the chief law enforcement officer. And he
wrote the paper for that, I believe.
No, it wasn't Scalia. It was the judge that got shot with Giffords.
Right, but Scalia had another, he came up. First of all, they got it and they appealed it. They took it to the Supreme Court and Scalia wrote a paper on it.
Right, so that's a very powerful statement.
Judge Rolls was responsible for letting it go to the Supreme Court.
There you go, right. So, you know, we kind of rest the case with the sheriff there.
Right. So therein is the sheriff. It's not on a federal level. On a federal level, you will get the marshal. You get him under Article 2. I think it's Section 2. Article 2, Section 2, which gives the authority to the legislators to write concerning officers of the court, particularly to control the court. And then the Judiciary Act of 1789, Article 23, Section 23, 25, and a few others in there breaks down the power and the authority of the marshal, which is almost a mirror image authority of the sheriff, only on a federal level. The only main difference between the marshal and the sheriff is that the marshal is appointed by the President of the United States. He appoints 94 of them. Okay, one for every federal district, whereas we elect our sheriff in each county. That's the difference. Anything else? Oh, well,
let's move on in the queue. Let's move on in the queue.
Appreciate the question, Bert.
Lots of people in there.
Okay, next question, Johnny B.
Am I on?
Well, hold on 1 second. It was Edward. Edward.
No. Edward was just on, I believe, or wasn't.
No, it wasn't. Edward was not just on.
Okay, so take.
Let me take care of this. It's Edward from Oregon. I'll pass this over to you in about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Ed from Oregon. You got the mic.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
Okay, now, I don't know what happened, but anyhow, I'm including you in my email to the Senate. The thing is that we're filing on this thing, and I'm starting recalls on judges, because it's time that we don't start standing up and throwing these judges out of office and quit playing this kindness game. This is where we're losing right now on the front. These gentlemen and these cops directly know what they're doing, and it's part of their DSP training. Okay, and it is very disturbing that people are not paying attention to the actual criminals that are doing this. When I sent you my document, you'll be receiving, John, I would like you to pass on to anybody else who would like to use the instrument. Okay, it is an educational instrument. It does prove the historical history, including that the Constitution is the law of the land. Every administrative rule does not count in the 50 states. That does not include Washington, D.C., and New York City, because they're owned by the Vatican. They're not part of the United States.
No, that's part of the United States. It's a fraud.
I already have it. It's in the document that New York City is owned by the Vatican. That's why the United Nations is there.
Listen, I understand what the fiction has done. I know how the fiction did it and ultimately did it. Ultimately, the work started. The ink on the Constitution wasn't even dry yet. It was still wet when they wrote the Judicial Act of 1789. And it is in the Judiciary Act, which was some of that was overturned in 1803. Hold on a minute. 1803. Some of that was overturned. Excuse me.
Well, 1773, when New York City was included into the British government.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's a fraud. A fraud is a fraud. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow. It doesn't.
Know that, John. Okay, we know the whole entire structure is a fraud, including our birth certificates.
Hang on a second. Edward, I'm going to have to mute you so I can talk, and then I'll unmute you so you can talk. You have to take turns, okay? Listen, you're absolutely correct. I'm not arguing what you're saying. They're claiming authority and ownership. They're claiming ownership of the municipality that they created in, 1868, I think. I forget exactly. But they did this through the Organic Act of 1868. But in order to get that Organic Act through, they had to first set the stage with the Chancery Courts in 1789. That was, some of that was already overturned already in 1802. Marbury versus Madison, not the chancery part of the court, but they did make mention that in that particular Judiciary Act of 1789, that there was unconstitutional statements there. In 1868? No, it was earlier than that. I forget what year it is, but it was when Jackson was president that they came up with the 14th Amendment. Jackson refused to sign the 14th Amendment. He said it wasn't ratified, number one. It was unconstitutional, number two. And it turns people into subjects, and I'm not signing it. He refused to sign it. It was never signed by the president of the United States. It also wasn't ratified. But they put it through anyway, and they go off as if it's existing. It's a fraud. The whole thing's a fraud. And the 14th Amendment turns the people into subjects. Okay? So they had to have the Judiciary Act to get the Chancery Courts going. They had to have the subjects created in the 14th Amendment in order to rule over and make them subject to the laws of whatever they want to create. Then they had to do the Organic Act of 68, if I recall, but somewhere around there, there was the Organic Act. In the Organic Act, they created the District of Columbia, although there was a D.C., but it was the District of Columbia that they created, which they created a municipality, which became a nation unto itself. It's sort of like you say, it's like Rome, it's like England. London, England, I guess. It's like Washington, D.C. It's like a world unto their own, and it's controlled. It's controlled by an oligarchy, and they control the administration. And in there, they went on and they used Article 1, I think it was Section 9. Article 1, Section 9, 17, Clause 17 and 18. Hang on, I'm looking up real quick to make sure I got the right numbers here. Okay, no, it was Article 8. Section 8. So it's Article 1, Section 8, and they tried to use 17 and 18, paragraph 17 and 18, claiming that they had the authority and a right to create this city, and then they gave it private ownership. It's run by an oligarchy, and they've taken over our federal city. Our founding fathers called Washington our federal city. It is the seat of federal government, which is the connection of all 50 states. We have representatives from all 50 states to make that up for the federal part of our government. And they have taken control of that under the Organic Act. Now, there's other acts that have taken place, but every single one of them was a fraud. They had no authority. The people didn't give an authority. The power must come from the people. We, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. We claimed our rights under God through the Declaration of Independence, that we have unalienable rights, and we're under God. We made God king, and we created three branches of government in order to control the necessary parts of government, but we never gave it away from the people. The people were to control that through the grand jury and also through the committee man process. We've lost both of those, one political, one judicial. Okay? So when they turn around and they say they own New York City or they own Washington, D.C., and no, they can't have it. It's not theirs to have. It was a fraud. It's unconstitutional. It's illegal. It's a fraud yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I'm not buying it. I'm not giving it to them. They can't have it. I don't care what they do. I give no authority to their jurisdiction. We, the people, shouldn't give any authority to their jurisdiction, and we should be hardcore on this. So they can't have it. Now, let me turn you back on, Ed, and you can say what you want to say now. Hang on. Okay, you're unmuted now, Edward.
Through this has to be at court, because when these men and women are rape, robbing, and pillaging us for our land, where does it say we actually need to go to a third party? Okay, I've been sitting here, been assaulted, shot, stabbed, my life almost beaten up, poisoned by the system and people in the system around it, okay, and I know, nobody gives a damn, all right, now what I'm filing right now, all right, and I'm filing for my birth certificate bond, and I want them to prove the deaths and stuff, and I can already prove it, I've already got all the record and history, okay, Now, I don't have to sit there and go to these kangaroo courts or any court to ask for forgiveness. The only way the courts were truly designed was off the Treaty of 1213. So if you didn't make amends to your injured party, this is why we had courts developed. All right, it's before the 1215 Magna Carta with King John's the Pope's violation of the Treaty of 1213. That's where the Magna Carta came from, that violation of the Treaty of 1213. Prior to that, you never had to ask the king or man if somebody came on your property. You had the lawful right to defend your family and property, including if that took somebody else's life. All right, that is not murder.
You still do. You still do. Don't let them tell you you don't.
There's people right now that have been falsely charged for defending their land. Okay, and the point is that we need to, what I'm suggesting, all right, and I'm going to get the floor back, but what I'm suggesting is look at the letter I'm sending you guys with everything outlined, including Admiralty Law written to 1066 AD. I wrote the entire structure from 1066 AD to today. That includes the Magna Carta, the Bible, as everybody want to go by, the 1599 Geneva Bible, the King James Bible that combined the church and state for our devastation. And it's all in this. It's been served on Congress. Eric Holder got it.
How about the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights? Did you include that?
Let me finish this. Now, when I served Eric Holder this instrument that you have, he came out and told the world that the police were not going to be covered in piracy anymore. All right? Now, I filed on Eric Holder Christmas time, me and Dave. All right? That pushed his retirement sooner, and hopefully we start getting the indictments on him. But that's going to come from all of us reading this and making sure the grand juries are together to indict him. Because if we don't have one set up in any part of the country ready to start going at a free grand jury to start charging these instruments, and if you want to know how to write warrants, I know how to write the warrants.
All right, hold on a minute. Let me just say a few things here. This is what we've been laboring for over 2 years now, or just about 2 years. We understood when we started this thing. First of all, we started this thing in New York. We never intended it to be national. We figured we'd do it in New York and then the other states would copy. Hold on. We were kind of naive back then and not realizing and understanding. And we were then drafted into other states and we went national. So we actually changed our name from New York Liberty Alliance to National Liberty Alliance. And so when we went national, we realized that we had to really get out and establish a presence of the people in one accord, focusing in for an administration for the common law grand juries in every single county. And we had to first start off with the states. So we started off trying to get whatever counties we could in any state, and eventually that state would become unified. And they're still continuing to look for leadership in the counties, but they've become unified because they went out and they established the reinstatement of the common law grand jury by people coming together and say, yeah, we want it. So it's a very simple act. Now, all of that exercise was done for a reason, in order to organize, in order to communicate, in order to get together as a people and start to build a coalition across the nation. Now, we have built that coalition across this nation. We have a presence in every state. We anticipate a presence in every county as soon as possible. But we do have a presence in every state. And we're focusing in on one accord and one focus. These courts were created by we the people through the Constitution. We the people established and ordained this Constitution for them, for the United States of America.
And our public servants, yes.
Okay? Right. So now this is ours. We paid for those buildings. We manned those buildings. We put employees in those buildings. We put elected officials in the buildings, commissioners, appointed people. We pay for the fax machines, the ink, the toner,
paid for
the computers,
the stocks and bonds,
the
and still covers the Supreme
we
Court.
Hold on. Let me finish. We paid for all of that. We own it. That is ours. And we established the fact that there are 94 federal districts. Let's just talk the federal level. There are 94 federal districts, and they are common law courts, and those are our courts. Just because these phonies, these frauds, these people of RICO, these people have come in and taken control, these people of black robes have come in and taken control of it, we're not going to let... This is a law enforcement problem, and we're going to put them in jail. They're either going to repent and start working with us and do the right thing, or they're going to go to jail. It's up
I
to
agree.
Them. We are finding them. We don't go into their courts asking them for nothing. Everything we are doing is a demand and a command. Now, they're being disobedient. They're not listening. The next paper that goes to the judges is a paper of contempt. They are in contempt of court. They are guilty of sin. We're going to move on from there, but we're going to use our courts to file our papers and do everything we need to do until we get to every single oath taker in this nation. Then that's when we better have the people there ready to do what has to be done, because only the people can save America. We have to do it in one accord. We have to do it focused, and we have to do it clearly, and we have to take back the judiciary. When we take back the judiciary, we take back everything in the nation, including the Federal Reserve. We take back our money. We take everything back. But you have to take the judiciary.
And the only reason on the Federal Reserve, if your birth certificate bond, if you claim it, and if you're lawful to 1851,
but that's,
you have to be lawful
fiction.
Bloodline going back.
We're not going to give any authority to their fiction. I don't care about what they did with the birth certificate and how they monetized things and all the games and money games and the fiction and the fact that you're all out at sea. It's all
is that we have
BS.
A right to protect our land from invasions and illegals
That's
coming
right.
into this country. The Constitution
That's,
states that. That is
right.
the law of the land.
That's
the
right.
1778
well, that's
Constitution is the law of the land. I have it filed right from the Queen of England. I paid for it to be in the paper. So the actual document has been published in the paper. Nobody's
will
disputed
you
that.
Okay.
One-page
that's
document, and that's the law of the land.
That I agree. Article 4, Section 4, the United States shall guarantee every state of this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. And on application of the legislature, of the executive, when the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence. And then it moves to the states, because if the federal government doesn't do it, now it's the Congress of the states to do it. And look, we got a lot of work left to do. We got four.
We're all working on this, John. That's the whole point.
I understand.
Because if we don't educate our children along the way with this, there is no future, because the children have to be educated.
Yeah, Edward, what we need to do is stay focused and stay in one accord. We can't go 10 different directions. We're doing a methodical thing. The first thing, we can't do anything until we educate the oath takers. That's going to take 4 to 6 weeks.
I know that. I've already been dealing with them. I've had some disagreements.
But you can't educate one or two. We have to get them all. That's
what I was doing. I was doing it on their website, and then the steward threw me off his website because I was actually putting up their administrative rules and the laws they had to go by. And he argued with me, even in a phone conversation, stating that we have to sit there and hold these people and educate them as slow as we can. And I'm going, no, we do it slow as you can. You're talking about taking too long, because if you educate them today of their honor of their oath of office, no piracy, rape, robbing, pillaging, no false traveling tickets, no hunting and fishing tickets, no administrative tickets, whatever. We could stop that tomorrow. And Stuart was like, we can't do that, and that's not our...
Edward, you have to go one at a time, though. You have to stay focused on the whole enchilada. You have to get the oath takers to understand what their duty is, and they have to understand when these people break the law, whenever they act under the color of law and violate you, these sheriffs and these marshals need to understand that. The most important person to educate are those two groups particularly. They need to know what this means, and they need to be able to see the law being broken. So, but I agree with a lot. Look, send us your papers. We'll take a look at them.
Yeah, send
and
me
we'll
a copy.
What and, we think, you know?
And we'll look. Maybe he's got some nuggets in there.
Send
we got
it to
a lot
John
of people
at nationallibertyalliance.org and also copy Gerard at nationallibertyalliance.org.
And I've already emailed it to you. It's coming. But the one thing that I would like to restrain from is using the word person. You use the word person, and that is
I'm
the definition of a
I'm
British
subject. I'm not giving them our language. No, that's why we have footnotes. We're going to establish them. Look, there's huge changes in some of the languages. It takes hundreds of years to change legal terms. But
I know that. We're doing a constitutional class that these guys took together and put right from the forefathers.
Hold on a minute.
Okay.
When you go from Black's Fourth to Black's Fifth, all of a sudden you see some major changes. What was it that you were looking at this week, Gerard? Was it the sovereign citizen or citizen or something that they had changed the meaning from Fourth to Fifth? I did look at citizens today a little bit, and I did see that there was a major difference in the understanding of the word citizen.
Yeah,
because
they're
trying to rob our words and make them mean different things. They want a sovereign citizen to be a terrorist. We're not going to give in to them. They can't have ownership of the English language. Words mean what they mean. They have meaning. We don't care. They can play their game. We'll tell them what it is, and we'll define it in our papers, and we're going to move on. We're not giving them no jurisdiction by genuflecting to them, bending our knee to say, okay, you have ownership of a word, person, which now means a corporation. No. U.S. 26 has no authority, no power, nothing. It itself says it's not law. So I don't care how they play their game on offshore, and they tell us we're out at sea and all that garbage with fiction. No, I don't buy it. They're liars. They're frauds. They need to go to jail.
All right, move on to the next call.
Okay, yeah, well, send us that paper. We'll take a look at it, Edward. Appreciate it. Okay, Johnny B.
I'm publicizing this.
I don't know what happened to Johnny B.
I don't know what happened. No, you got to do next question.
Okay, Jason. Yeah, I did, but...
Hi, John, Jason from Jersey.
How you doing?
Not so much a question, but I just want to make a statement. Drake on Cosmic Voice last Wednesday actually called out to have the military ask him, call on him about the coming into action to take people in bad behavior out of office.
Well, they may act upon that, and Drake has no clue on what he's calling for now. There is no authority for the military to be doing anything on American soil. That is not their job. That's the people's job. This is a law enforcement situation, and if necessary, the sheriff, through posse comitatus, should get... First of all, in order to do something, there is a mechanism and a process already applied. It's in the Constitution. It's in laws that have the authority under the Constitution. It exists. It's there. And all we have to do is focus in and execute that mechanism. Now, we're not going to talk too much about it, but we're not definitely – look, if you call the military, you've lost America. It's gone. That's exactly what they want. Trust me when I tell you, they're going to pull martial law in. I'll bet you dollars to donuts their plan to pull martial law in is to say, okay, let's make this play. And Obama's really going all the way out there. And this is Obama talking to them. Look, at you guys come out and you arrest me. Now, of course, it's the other people. It's the oligarchy behind Obama that's planning this whole thing. And they will throw Obama under the bus if they have to. They don't care. But the bottom line is this. Come in, let's arrest Obama, let's make it look good, take control, let's go and arrest the Congress and all these other things, and we'll tell all these patriots that think that that's what we need to do, that we're doing it for them, and all this other stuff. Meanwhile, the trap is set, the iron fist is closed, and we are fried. Look at the moment that the military moves into Washington, D.C., the people better get up and get arms and get them out of there. They better do it. They better understand they need to do it. I don't want to go there, okay? But the military has no authority, no power, no right. It's the most dangerous thing in the world for the military to go in to try to do anything in Washington, D.C., or any place on American soil. And Washington is not a District of Columbia per se. That is American soil. You can call it District of Columbia if you want. It's American soil. We own that. That is the seat of our federal government. The military does not belong there. The whole thing is a coup, and it's a plan, and people are going to fall sucker to it. Don't. That's why we're going to sound the alarm. Don't fall sucker to that game. Only the people can take care of this.
Hey, John, is it possible for you to get Johnny B. at the bottom of the queue because he was next and we accidentally dumped him?
Yeah, let me see if I can get down to him. I don't know how that happened.
How it happened either.
I don't know why the queue doesn't stay down when I roll it down.
Okay,
never did.
See if you can find him in the text chat in the other part of the area and unmark him.
Okay.
I'm looking for him myself.
I
don't see
him. On it. See if I can find him. He's in Kansas.
He's in the...
No, I'm not finding him.
Okay, let me see if I can find
him. Okay, I got him. I think I thought I had him. I thought I had him.
Hello.
Okay, you've been unmuted.
I'm there now, finally. It was quite interesting, John, when you all dropped me. You dropped the entire state of Kansas.
Okay.
Not on purpose.
All my people had to call back in.
Dog.
Okay.
So
go ahead.
I don't know if that'll help you out or not. Are we going to make a move on the press?
Well, we already included, let me go back to this. This is served First Amendment duty to act, news media. Under the penalty of law is to print a copy of the people's for the people. Failure to do so will be construed as aiding or abetting the enemy. Look, I've sent out to 800 news media. We sent a Quo Wanto out. We're not aware of any news media that actually printed it or even spoke about it. Okay, that's how bad it is in America. Okay, now we're sending it out to them again, and we got some updated stuff, and we're going to put what we can together out. We're going to send it out to them now, but now we're going to tell them they have a warning. They have special authorities and power under the First Amendment, and the reason was given in order to protect America. And if they don't do their job, then they're aiding and abetting the enemy. And when we do get into power, we're going to remove all of that from all of these newspapers and news medias from these people and sell them off to others. We're not going to allow them to keep it. And we're going to have to consider whether they need to be indicted for aiding and abetting the enemy. Clearly, they're not reporting. So now they're
absolutely
being ordered
not
to do so. We are ordering them on every paper we're sending out from this point forward. They're being ordered to do so, to report on this very serious matter.
Well, I've got several other things. We've got a court case in central Kansas, Saline County, where I was talking to a lady today that's been
But we want to stay on point.
Raped.
Yeah.
Right.
We need to stay on point. If you do have something that you need assistance with, get a hold of Eric, see what he can do, and then he can update us on those kind of things. We don't want to get involved in the details of a case on Monday nights.
Yes, I understand that. And we've put him in contact. Well, we offered their information. It's up to him. Have we got a way for the follow me phone with check or money order?
Have we got a... you got to call them up and ask them. I think you can send them in monthly checks. I don't know. I presume you can. I'm on automatic, so I don't know.
Right.
That seems to be the way of things. But
right. I don't like that automatic thing because people tend to lose their budgets that way. The other thing, I was, because of what I've got coming up at the end of March, I was leaning towards the bill of exchange as my ace in the hole because I'm not getting any information as far as just
The bill of exchange, that brings us back to you heard the paper we read. We're filing this paper.
I'm also aware that these people pushing these bills of exchange are not looking to get rich, John.
I don't care what they're looking. They're using fiction.
They're looking to get people arrested.
They're using evil to do good, and that's not possible. Okay, you can't use a wrongdoing to fix a wrongdoing. You have to use light. You have to use principles. You can't do the expedient thing. You got to do the just thing, and the just thing takes time. You have to have patience. You know, you have to go forward little by little.
My life is a testament to virtue.
Okay, well that's what we
need.
I've been
dealing with these people since I was born.
They kicked
me out at 8 years old.
The moment we start thinking of bills of exchange, we run into trouble. It's over. It's over. And I'll tell you what,
if we don't have any other recourse, I'm like the guy out in Oregon. I'm shooting from the hip.
If you as a people with outside, you could do whatever you please. You're free to do anything. When these people in Colorado and other places go out and they call themselves the common law grand jury administrators or even the common law grand jury, and they start to connect that and they start threatening the sheriffs, no less. We need to educate sheriffs, not threaten them. Goodness, we got to win them over. look at when they go out and do these things, it's a bad thing for us. It gives a bad taste concerning us. We had one guy who called us up and talked with us about the sheriff, and that the sheriff was, they hated our guts, man, because they were hearing these things. And he turned them around, and he revisited and reconsidered. Now they're looking at us, and they're seeing what we're doing is good stuff. Look at people are taking advantage of what we're doing for their own benefit. I don't care what it is. There's only one way to save this nation, and that's the people collectively across this nation together in one accord. United we stand, or divided we shall fall. And anybody moving a county or a state in a different direction and playing with wrongdoing to fix wrongdoing is fooling themselves, and it's not helping the cause. The fiction has nothing to do with common law. It's alien to common law. It's water and oil. It doesn't mix. It doesn't work. You can't have it. And I object to these people, what they have done and have hurt our good name that we have worked. You look back in history, you will not find any place anywhere where these people, where the name common law grand jury was used with a grand jury. It's presumed, it's understood, of course, in history, but it's never been used. We purposely use that statement to separate ourselves from the citizens grand jury, from any other grand jury, the puppet grand juries, and all those things. We purposely use that name, and then people come in, and they take advantage, and they make believe we're us, and all of a sudden they're doing their own thing, and they have all these secrets going on, and it's destructive towards the movement of the people to save this nation. They should be ashamed of themselves. And as a matter of fact, some of them people might end up being indicted for aiding and abetting because they became part of that and destructive. I don't know. That's up to the people to see what kind of destruction they have done or will do in the process of doing what they're doing.
All right.
Okay, I guess we'll move on. Gerard,
you want to
take it?
We got lots of people in the queue.
Okay, you take it from here. I'm going to back off for a while.
Okay.
I may pipe in.
Okay. Okay.
Aloha.
Hey, how you doing?
Aloha, Kalama. But
what a pleasure to hear that you're expanding. I have a point from my research on sheriffs so that I reported the news correctly for Pacifica News. I understand also the sheriffs may go beyond their certain district and county or burg. And I am in full agreement. It's very important to educate the sheriffs in any way we can. There is a great discrepancy between how the sheriffs see their office. For instance, Sheriff Arpaio has taken two lawsuits against Obama. His most recent one on amnesty was overturned by the judge. It's being appealed. His other one on his eligibility to be president was thrown out. Yet, on the other hand, there are sheriffs that will say in one interview, okay, why are the an interviewer, I won't waste time on details.
Let me just insert something in here, Kalama. Whoever is living in those counties should get a hold of that sheriff and connect them with us, and maybe he should bring those indictments to us.
Yes, that's a great idea.
Anybody living in those counties or near those counties, get a connection with these sheriffs and talk with them. Show them who National Liberty Alliance is, and let's make a connection.
Yeah. And there's one sheriff who was challenged as to why these military vehicles were in their county and their small towns. And he said they are for the constitutionalists. So you have this broad deference between what sheriffs, as we know, sheriffs believe their duty is.
Well, at least he told the truth.
But it's black humor.
That sheriff ended up in severe trouble.
Yes, indeed. So I want to repeat this, and I would like to make sure that this is clarified in legalistic, common law terms, in footnotes at least, on what goes to the sheriffs, is that the sheriffs have broader duties than even their district or their county. They can even go beyond the state. And I think, contemplating this, I said, well, that must mean communication with other sheriffs, which was done recently as sheriffs from other districts and counties and states cooperated and went to Washington, D.C. together to protest.
They have associations. They have national associations. They have state associations.
Correct. There's national association. And I would say that goes to actually enforcing arrests.
Mm-hmm.
That means communicating in all ways, and it means collaborating in all ways to say, to represent we the people rather than the federal government. So I am in full agreement. It's extremely important. I'm not going to take too much of the time here on anything else. Let me look on my agenda here. The media. I think it's very wise to hold the media responsible. I'm a free media. I owe my allegiance to no corporation, which is above the law. Corporations, all the corporations are above the law. We have our own battles in Hawaii, and I won't go into that. But the point is the media should be held responsible, and now it's coming out and it's being more and more people are speaking from their heart, speaking from their soul, speaking from their own individual right person. And the media is being outed. Every week, somebody from the media is turning on their own corporate entity and speaking the truth, sometimes right in front of the public on national media. And so I am in total agreement with this, and we need to pursue this with the corporate media as far as holding them responsible. And they, if they are not publishing the Polaranto or Mandamus or any document that has to do with our freedom, exercising the freedom of the First Amendment, freedom of press, then they should be held liable. They should stand before a common law grand jury. I don't want to take any more time, but the sheriffs have more power than we imagine. And once again, I want to repeat, it goes beyond the borders of the county and state. And I would like, if it's possible, for that to be included in the approach to the sheriffs. Thank you so much for your great service to the Republic. And I'm very happy that Guerrilla Media is incorporated in the media outreach. Thank you again. Aloha.
Thank you, Kawama. Okay. Next up is Connecticut Dan. And I just want
to
say something before you get going, Dan. We have other elected officials with police powers that are not using them, and one of them is governors. If the governors have police power, and it extends beyond their state, if the governors would get together, they could do the same thing the sheriffs could do. But I'm not going to open that conversation. I'm just saying that there's other elected officials that have the power. Look, they all take an oath to defend. What does that mean? So really, even your congressman and senator should be going after the president when he does unconstitutional stuff. But a governor actually has arrest powers. So that's something that somebody could look into. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay, just calling in regards to some information I want to pass along with the special considerations paragraph in the writ of mandamus, particularly when it addresses the Connecticut situation. First of all, it says Connecticut Constitution Section 25 requires the election of a sheriff. That's actually Article 4th, Section 25. So that would have to be adjusted so it says Article 4th, Section 25. And as far as the legislators abolishing the sheriff, I just wanted to make people aware of the situation with respect to that. Back in 2000, an amendment was proposed by the state legislature to replace sheriffs with judicial marshals and state marshals. Now, the final step in that amendment process is for the people to vote on the amendment in the next general election, which they did, and they voted to replace the sheriff with judicial marshals and state marshals. So the legislators did not abolish the sheriff system. It was the people who voted to amend the Connecticut Constitution to replace the sheriffs with judicial marshals and state marshals.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, is then they lost their constitutional officer. There's no authority to be able to do that, and it was a setup to begin with, and it still wasn't ratified correctly. But you said Article
4.
Which article? Article 4, Section 25?
You're right.
Okay. All right. I'll
so,
make
so
that
you have
change.
To add that. But I just want to make it clear that this says that the legislators abolish the sheriff. That's not correct. It's the people voted to amend the Constitution to replace sheriffs with state marshals and judicial marshals. So it was the people who had the final say in the process.
Right, but that's not a proper constitutional convention or anything of that nature.
Well, it wasn't a convention. They voted on it in the general election of 2000.
But it's still not proper. You can't really change a constitution that way. Look at every amendment to the U.S. Constitution, as far as I'm concerned, is null and void. Anything after the 10th is irrelevant because there's nothing but problems with every single one of them. And it was never done properly. The people have got to come together in a convention. They have to make some decision-making. They have to discuss it and debate it and then make a decision. Then it's got to be ratified. And it's not all as simple as they want to make it. And that was a move in order to get rid of the only constitutional officer in the state. Besides that, they can't do it. He's a fixture of the common law. There's no one to protect there's no one charged with the protection of the Constitution. The people need someone that answers to them directly, not to the government, not to any elected individual. It's got to be to the people. He or she has got to be elected by the people and answer to the people and cannot be removed by anyone but the people. Without that,
okay, well, the sheriff system is not a federal system. It's a county system, which is part of the state,
right.
And the people of Connecticut voted within each of their counties to get rid of the sheriff's system.
It doesn't matter. It was not done properly anyway. But they can't do it. Why don't we just vote God out and vote common law out? You can't.
But that fact aside, is the legislators did not abolish the sheriff system. I want to make that point. So
I'll look.
That accusation has to be adjusted.
Okay. Yeah, this is the information that I've received, and I did do in-depth study on the marshals, and I did do some studying on the Connecticut Constitution, as far as that it shall be elected, and that has not been changed. They haven't altered it. There's no way that they can alter it, at least not anyway.
But the people can alter their own constitution if they do it through an amendment process.
You can't get rid of common law because it's to them and others. Look at common law is one person can call for it and everyone else can say, we're not going to apply it. That's that's only self-destructive for themselves, but you can't take it away from another person. It's unalienable rights. One of the part of the process in order to protect the system is a constitutional officer. He must be had somewhere. And clearly
but
you can't
get rid of it. But the sheriff system is not one of the unalienable rights in Article 1st of the Connecticut Constitution, because that's called the Declaration of Rights, which is
the
state version of the Bill of Rights.
Right, I understand that, Dan, but who
so it's not it's not it's not listed as an unalienable right.
Dan, who takes the authority now? Who's in charge with this?
Well, the closest thing to it are the judicial marshals, the chief judicial marshals.
Who elects them?
No one.
Hold on. Who appoints them?
They're under the judiciary.
So they become political, don't they? They're controlled by a political animal. And of all people, the judiciary, of all people, come on, people need to understand. You cannot create a system that's self-destructive. You can't do it. You can't remove God out of the system because you can't have it without God. You can't remove the processes that we have. And part of the process, you have to have the coroner, you have to have the sheriff, you have to have the grand jury, and you have to have the trial jury. With those four things, you remove any one of those, you've now destroyed common law. It doesn't exist. It's an animal that cannot exist. You have to have four legs.
Marshals are part of the government. They're under whether it's the judicial branch or executive branch, and the people created the government. Therefore, any official is answerable to the people. They're all answerable to the people.
But you know how that works. You cannot take a constitutional officer and give the authority to control that constitutional officer to some political animal. You can't do it. You can't give it to the governor. The governor of New York State has already tried to get rid of sheriff. They've already got rid of seven of them. I don't know how they did that, but seven counties don't have it. Five of them is five boroughs of New York. But nevertheless,
I can't attest to other states, but in Connecticut, all officials take an oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution, which means they are answerable to the people.
Okay, here's the problem. Okay, here's the problem. You cannot remove that leg from the system. Let's go back to the basics. We have unalienable rights. That's the Declaration of Independence. Okay, everybody, we're a republic. One person can exercise their right. The other 99% may not want to. That's their business. But they want to, and someone that's going to be born down the line, your grandchildren or someone, that you can't take it away from them. So you cannot remove the process that protects the system. You can't do it. You can't get rid of the coroner. You can't get rid of the sheriff. You can't get rid of the grand jury. And you can't get rid of the trial jury. Those are four things that are required in common law. You don't have a court without them. You don't have a common law court without them. It doesn't
exist. But there's no mention of sheriff in the Bill of Rights, and there's no mention of sheriff in the Declaration of Rights in the Connecticut Constitution.
That's federal. It doesn't
matter. But there's no mention of sheriffs in the Declaration of Rights in the Connecticut Constitution.
Goes back to you. I don't know why you're holding this position. You want to get rid of the sheriff and you don't want to see him no more?
No, I'm saying that, first of all, that it wasn't the legislators who got rid of him, it was the people. And secondly, even if you're talking about judicial marshals or state marshals, they're still answerable to the people because we are the sovereign. And therefore, every official is answerable to us.
You do understand you can't do it, right?
Where does it say you can't do it in the U.S. Constitution or the Connecticut Constitution?
The process doesn't work without a constitutional officer. You have two of them. One is the coroner and one is the sheriff. You cannot have a common law system without those two players of that role.
Officials.
The other thing is the people. The people are the judges, whether they're
right, and they voted to amend the Connecticut Constitution.
Yes, look at, there are places that there are states I heard that have gotten rid of the grand jury. New York claims to have gotten rid of the grand jury. Okay, is that possible? Can you possibly do that?
That's a different story because under Amendment 10 in the Bill of Rights, it says that the grand jury either resides with the state or the people. It has to reside with one or the other.
But the federal government has nothing to do with the state government. That's why
you go to the state constitution.
So that power either resides
with the state or the people.
Right. What you do find, though, in the federal level is that they tried to put a sheriff there. They called him a marshal. They realized that, how are we going to give them power? How are we going to get them? Well, they separated the three powers, and they gave the power of appointment to the president. They said, okay, Mr. President, you have the power to appoint the people to this position. The only difference is that the legislators can make certain decisions on whether it's 2 years or 4 years. They decided for 4 years. They also were to list out the authorities of the court. They had to have a court officer, and it had to be a constitutional court officer. You can't have a constitutional court without a constitutional court officer. You must have law enforcement. You cannot have a common law system without a common law enforcement. The marshal is that common law enforcement on the federal level. And if you read the Judiciary Act, they played some games and they're trying to get rid of the authority. They don't have they gave the judges the authority to be able to get rid of at will the deputies. Now the deputies are chosen by the marshal. I'm sure they would love the judges to be able to get rid of the marshal, but he's appointed by the president. There was nothing they could do about that because that's in the Constitution, in Article 2. So they had to go along with that part so at least they can get rid of the deputies. But where in logic and in history take the sheriff, when the sheriff gets his deputies, who can get rid of the deputies? No one could get rid of those deputies. Only the sheriff has the power and the authority to get rid of those deputies, and the people have the power and the authority through the grand jury. Other than that, nobody can touch them.
And the people have the power to amend their own constitution like they did in Connecticut in 2000.
Anytime you have anything that can come between the constitutional officer and the people, like a politician, you've lost it. It's done. You violated it. It doesn't work.
But all officers of government are constitutional officers because they swear to uphold the U.S. Constitution and their state constitutions.
Yeah, look what they're doing. If you don't have law enforcement officers who understand this and put these people in jail when they act under color of law because they control them, what do you got? You got the fox in head of the hen house here.
Right. Well, you have sheriffs who are not complying with the Constitution.
I'm not going to continue to argue the point. The point is it doesn't exist. It cannot exist. It's like having the sunlight without water. You're going to burn. The leaves are going to burn. You got to water those leaves so that moisture is there, and they won't burn, and that they flourish, and the process of photosynthesis goes through.
I can't speak for other states, but in order to have the sheriffs come back, you'd have to bring back county government in Connecticut, which was abolished in 1960, and county courthouses were abolished in 1855. And one reason they got rid of the county governments in Connecticut was to get rid of a level of taxation. And since then, the overall tax burden in Connecticut has become one of the highest in the country. So if you were to bring back the county government, you would be increasing taxes on the people of Connecticut, and they would revolt against the common law process.
You would say that, but that's not true. The tax problem is another problem. It has nothing to do with the county. But you know what? Connecticut has a serious problem, and the people better wake up to it. Otherwise, Connecticut's never going to get back on track. You got to get yourself a constitutional sheriff. He's got to have county boundaries. All of this is created under common law. You could trace it back thousands of years. You can go all the way back to the Magna Carta. If you want to know the history of... If you want to know the history of common law, and it talks about the sheriff and the grand jury and the trial jury and the coroner and all that stuff, go get a book called Common Law by Brent Winters. He goes all the way back to Germanic tribes and gets back about 200 or 300 A.D. when they started to really start to show up in England and other places in Europe. So,
well, if you go back, it actually goes back farther. It goes back to Rome.
Of course it does. Of course it does. He does trade.
So I've read up on that. But, you know, the police force started in France and evolved to go into England by the 1830s.
Common law does not go back to Rome, by the way. Okay.
Well, according to a couple of books I've read, there was common law.
No, that's Justinian law. They changed it. Look, what happened was you had the Babylonian law, which ultimately was total control of human beings, and there was all kinds of problems with that. There's been battles going on for thousands of years concerning Babylonian law. And what happened is before the Roman system was set up, there was a guy named Justinian who took it, and they renamed the law, calling it Justinian law, and they piped it down a little bit, but it still was a process to control the people. It's statutory to begin with. And then it changed to Roman law. Okay, and then you have this big battle between ultimately the church and the people. The church wanted to bring in Roman law. They wanted to bring in total control of the people. And you had the Germanic tribes that came down. They were the heroes of this whole thing. They brought this common law into the process to begin with in England and throughout all of Europe. And they brought common law in, which was rule under God. And this whole process was built up. You had the sheriff, you had the coroner. All this took time, but by the time you hit about 600 or 700 A.D., this whole system started to really come into focus. We know by 1215 that you had all this stuff. You had the county, you had the sheriff set up, you had the coroner set up, and you had the people, the juries were already in process. And all of that working together, that is common law. You cannot remove any of those mechanisms. You remove one, the whole thing collapses.
All right, I got a question for Dan.
Go ahead.
You said they removed the county government in Connecticut, so there's no
Yeah, they
county.
Abolished it on October 1st, 1960.
Okay, so there's no county. So where does that leave the towns? They can't remove the town governments. You have to have that, right? So
they
have
town,
Right. So if there's town governments, that raises their powers, I would think, since there's no county. Because what do you have? You have the town and you have the state, right?
Right. So they have more autonomy over themselves than they did under county governments, which means
they have
more control over their police force.
Right. They have home rule law, probably, is what they call it, I think, which means when the town makes a law, it carries the same weight as the legislatures do. So, Marion, can't the towns do an elective law enforcement official and put their own sheriffs in? The town elected him. He answers to us. And he would have the same powers as a county sheriff, only it would be on a town-wide basis. Look, they can't tell the people they can't do it. If they got rid of the county and they did that legally, then I guess that power resides in the people at the town level.
Well, it gets back to the people being the sovereign, and they can ultimately decide, you know, what they want to do, including amending the Connecticut Constitution like they did in 2000. So it's possible, Gerard, I never thought about it, Maybe it's possible. It'd have to be. I'd have to think about it more thoroughly.
I think the Constitution is going to take a two-thirds vote, right?
Yeah, but
it's
some of this
hard.
Is an impossibility. It's self-destructive. Look, a lot of people want to remove God from common law. It can't happen. You can't have common law without God. It just doesn't exist. Do you have an
understand, but
right?
I don't think
so
you're equating.
Oh yeah,
but you're not
equating
sheriffs with God, though, are you?
No, but I'm creating the process in order to make it cohesive, in order to make it work. You can't eliminate the constitutional officer who answers to the people directly.
Well, they're all constitutional officers.
No, then, but they don't answer directly to the people. You need to. If you don't understand that, you don't understand the problems of America. The problems of America is out of control.
I understand the history of Connecticut.
But the whole thing is self-destructive, no matter how you go. But in any event, I don't know. We'll just
well, anyway, but my point was that the legislators did not abolish the sheriff system.
I
just want to make that point, so you may want to be able to change that particular part of the special considerations paragraph. Because we don't want to accuse them of something they didn't do.
Right. So right. I'll look further into this to see how I would word this better.
But all right, well, I appreciate your time.
The legislators had no authority, nevertheless, but I'll have to see how this will work out because I entrusted some of this information off of someone else as far as, you know, hearing about the legislators and looking into what happened and looking into the Connecticut Constitution and seeing that it still says shall be elected. How can you possibly remove that?
Here's the problem.
Here is another problem. You cannot change the body of a constitution once it's set up under common law. This is a common law principle. You can't change that body.
Well, I don't want to take any more time. I know you got other people on the line, but if you want to talk to me about it, my phone number's on the NLA website. Just give me a call and we can talk.
Yeah. There is a ruling that says that they cannot take, in other words, when they amend constitutions, they can only add liberty. They can't take it away. So if you could prove that the people lost liberty by that move, it would be unconstitutional because that state constitution ultimately has to conform, at least in the constitutional parameters of it, with the federal, because everybody had to conform to the federal to come in. I mean, I'm not talking about with the state's rights, but at least on those basic inalienable rights, they all had to conform. So if they did something in their constitution that took rights away and diminished rights, that would be illegal. You can't amend the Constitution to take rights away. You can only give more rights. And that's been said in the Supreme Court on more than one occasion. So that's I'm a revolutionary. Go out and find a couple towns and let them elect a constitutional police force, and you'll see how fast they put a county sheriff back in.
That would be interesting. But anyway, if you want to talk to about the Connecticut situation, John or Gerard, just give me a call because I don't want to take up any more time. People are waiting their turn.
Yeah, it was a good point. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Hi, John. I'm happy you're feeling better. Hello?
Hi. Thank you.
We're here.
Hi, Gerard.
Hello?
Go ahead, Ellie. What's your question?
John said earlier that he was going to stop the state meetings, and I wonder why for about 5 or 6 weeks. Why is it we cannot?
Let me just go through that very quickly. We need assistance in what we're doing. What we spoke about earlier in the first hour is a tremendous amount of work. We need people's attention towards getting this paperwork done, getting all the work done we need to do. We need stuffing envelope. We need so much work to be done. And when people are not involved in that, they go to a state meeting. They're coming to a Monday night meeting. They go to a state meeting. And the states aren't focusing in on the real work, which has to be done now. That's why we set up the district leaders in order to get the states working together to get the job done, which is what we created NLA for, which is to get the papers into the court. So for the next 6 weeks or so, roughly speaking, we're asking all the states to not have state meetings. You'll have people who won't come to that third meeting. It's tough enough to come to the two meetings, okay? It's tough enough to get people to one meeting. We gotta have them at the Monday night meeting. They need to understand what's going on. They need to be informed. They need to hear about the papers. They need to have questions and answers so we're all on the same page. And we need to be doing the same thing across the nation. Now we need to do the work. And the states, we tried to do it with the states separately, and we have certain states that aren't powerful enough. They don't have enough involved membership to get the work done, and they got to get the money together and do different things. So we collected, we brought them together, three or four, as a coalition to begin with. We had a lot of states. It's like you keep reeling them in, and when you reel one in, you go to reel another one, and another one falls away. Look, we got to get on the same page. Either we're going to save America or we're not. So no more state meetings. Let's have co-state meetings or shall I say three or four state meetings come together in a district meeting until we get the work done. And besides that, at some point, state meetings are going to become, what, once every 6 months or something? I mean, look, you're going to be busy in the county. You need to be doing the work of the people, which is administrating to the grand juries at some point. So the state meetings are not that important from the standpoint at this point. They were important really for trying to organize, and they fulfilled its purpose as best it can for the moment. We need now to get the districts together with three or four states, work together, and get the job done.
Okay.
You know, to be honest with you, some state coordinators, you know, they're just off in la-la land. I mean, they unfortunately, some of them have their own agenda, and they're doing different things, and they're not paying attention. They need to pay attention to the thing that's going to save America. So that's why. So, and then you look at 4 to 6 weeks from now, we get to that final paper, and it won't be the final paper, but it's really the most important paper we want to file. We want to get to that one. And then maybe we can break up a little bit into these state meetings again. But I think really we need to be united across the nation. And it seems wise to do it district ways, three or four states working together. You can't work 50 states together. It's too much. And if you separate them all, you're not pulling together. So we have to do something.
Okay. I don't totally agree, but that's okay if you want it this way. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Thank
you. You're welcome. Thank you, Ellie. So we got Florida Sarah on next. You're open. You have the floor.
Hi, everybody. Just real quickly, I'm just going to state that I think it's really important when you're handing out sheriff by what authority, that people ask the question, why do you really think we have two law enforcement agencies? Why do we have police and sheriffs? I remember as a child wondering, what the heck is the difference? So, you know, it's like, it's kind of redundant to have two until you understand one is constitutional and one is private security. Other thing that I wanted to discuss about the paper on bill of exchange, I agree that no one that's working with NLA should be filing those kind of papers in NLA's name. Never, never, never. So that paper is correct, but I just want to clarify for private trust that they've already made proclamations to the SESCI trustees in all three city states. It's an international private trust. Those people, private capacity, have every right, but that has nothing to do with NLA.
Well,
so I just,
in order for common law to come into being, the fiction has got to disappear from the land altogether. So you want one or the other, and you can't have fiction with reality. They don't mix. You can't have fraud with righteousness. They just don't mix. So I hear what you're saying, and I understand what you're saying. I think, unfortunately, too many people have been too educated in the wrong direction, and I blame that on a lot of websites, and there's a lot of poison there. You got to understand what you're doing is playing with wrongdoing. When you realize that, just go down to the basics. It's wrong.
I'm going to bring up a point. When it's private trust, that is international. That is not U.S. citizens.
No, No,
there are.
You can call it international, but we should have nothing to do with that evil. That's evil. It's evil. You can't make a person a cattle. You can't do it. It's evil. No matter how you get it, you can't give an individual a value. You're enslaving the person. It's evil. It's wrong. The whole thing is built upon evil.
This part I agree. I'm just going to state that there are international treaties that when people are in the private trust, they have international treaties to stand on.
Well, you can have them and you can play with them you want, but you certainly can't play on the law in the land of the United States. It doesn't belong here. It's not part of the American way. It doesn't give the authority or yield to unalienable rights. It's hardcore. It's wrongdoing and it's evil. Now, people want to play with it because they become educated. They've invested a lot of time in it and they want to work the system. And you can. I don't know for what benefit. The only benefit I know is money. So you really change. And money, in my opinion, but I think what we need to do is get back to justice. That's what we need, the common law, and it has no place. There's no place in it. You want to go to Italy or you want to go to Germany and you want to play with it? I'll tell you what, if America gets rid of it, I believe it'll collapse around the world.
John, there should be justice everywhere. Unfortunately, there are all kinds of jurisdictions that are being forced down people's throats.
That's right. It's evil. And the whole thing is set up on chancery court. That's what the 1789 Judiciary Act did. Is it moved everything?
People should not do any kind of remedy for themselves. They should wait till the whole nation of ignoramuses in America learn what their real rights are. We're talking maybe another 5 years till people really get it.
I don't think we have 5 years, to be honest with you.
I don't see it in the next 30 days. I just
Well, hold it. Remember this. You don't need everyone to fix the problem. Look at most people are like cattle. They are like slaves. They are just followers, and they're just going to go this way or that way. And when they start to see things are better, they're going to like it better. Now it's up to the people. When you get it to the point where you can return justice back into the courts, and you don't need everybody to return justice back in the courts. I have a magic number, and my magic number is about 15,000. Across the nation. That's my magic number, but I think we need more than that, but that's good enough. We could do it with 15,000. But the point is this. The point is this, though. Once you move the courts back to justice, believe me, when the people see what real liberty is, they're going to like it. But we now have another duty. It can take a whole generation to really educate the people back to where they really should be. We got to work in the schools.
Well, we need... People have been working at this for 50 years, 30 years, 10 years, whatever, and to say that people shouldn't try to do their remedy in international courts or international systems when they've already lost their homes, their families.
People can do whatever they want. They can. Now, but you're going to look at, if you're going to ask me the morality of it, I'm not going to lie to you. Why should what purpose does a lie over truth have? Okay? The fact of the matter is, the truth is the truth. I understand what you're saying.
Okay, listen, you're talking about someone in Europe.
Hold on
that
a minute, Sarah. Listen.
They cannot get their remedy in the United States.
Okay, Sarah, listen, I understand what you're saying. I agree that people have the right to do what they want to do, but that doesn't make it right. That's all I'm saying. Now, with National Liberty Alliance, we've always said if people want to play with that game and that's a fire, you don't cross a T or you don't dot an I and you're going in their jurisdiction, it's their sandbox, and they don't want to share with you, and they're going to put you in jail unrighteously anyway if they want to. But the point is this, if you want to go play with that fire and you want to take the chance to get, because the only thing I see at the end of that rainbow is money, that's all they're chasing, I see $100 million bills that they're writing up. And so if you want to play there, That's your prerogative. You could do it. Don't bring it to National Liberty Alliance. Don't bring it to the common law grand jury, the administrations, or the people. Don't even mention those names because it has nothing to do with righteousness. Now, the bottom line is this. Ask me if it's moral. My answer is no, it's not moral. It's evil. Can you do it? Well, the whole world is playing in evil. They're doing it. You want to go play with them? Go play with them. That's your business. So I agree with you on that end. But it doesn't change the fact that it's immoral. That's what I'm saying. So.
Okay, so you're telling the whole world they have to come to the United States for justice. Is that what you're saying?
I didn't say that. No, not at all. No. Well, I think justice is – I think when justice – look it. With justice comes liberty, okay? The whole thing is getting to liberty. If you can bring justice into the courts, you're bringing liberty back to America. I think liberty is popular. I think when the other nations see what we're doing, how come is it we have seven nations already? We have seven countries that want to join us already. The only thing that's stopping these countries from joining us is us having the ability of enough money to try to facilitate them. I don't have the money to facilitate them. We have to create sections on, you know, areas on our website so that they can come together, and we have to do some research in certain areas. We'll have to entrust them to do some of the research because they're a different country in a different way, but unalienable rights are unalienable rights. It's the same anywhere. But the bottom line is that lots of countries want to join us. They want to return back to justice and righteousness and liberty too. They'd love to get there. So, but if they want to play with the fire and they want, they can do what they want. That's their business. It's a wrongdoing and it's a misjustice and to the people of that nation when people keep playing with that fire when they can get rid of it. Why keep something that's evil when you can replace it and get it with good and people can flourish off of it, you know?
Again, I disagree with saying international treaty is evil. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. All right.
Now,
you have that right to say that.
The United States should be following the Declaration of Independence and the constraints of the Constitution.
Right.
That is what absolutely must be for all people here. They should not have to pursue international treaty for remedy. But because we have a lot of people acting corruptly, many people, that's the only way to get remedy.
Well, what fellowship does darkness have with light? You know? So, I mean, whatever. If people are going to do the wrong thing. Look, you'll always have a lot of people that's going to chase the dollar, and that'll be that. But at some point, when common law does apply itself in the United States, and it gets into every county, when it gets to that point, you're not going to be able to play in that sewer anymore. Now, I guess you will be able to go into the international courts and play there if you want, I guess. But America will be disconnected from that, so there'll be no more value on that. And I think the monetary system and everything is going to change and go back to silver if you get back to liberty and the Constitution. So the whole thing just falls apart anyway. It's all a fiction. It's make-believe. It's RICO. It's people making money. That's what the courts are all about, is settling these stupid accounts. And
according
that's wrong.
To Estonian banking, it's the people's credit, okay?
Okay.
Not the debt and usury on their credit.
You could do whatever you want. I agree. I'm not going to argue that point. I'm just saying at some point I don't think it's going to be able to survive in America because it's a wrongdoing and it won't be able to survive in the courts. I just don't see it. That's my opinion, and we'll see what will happen when we get there. I don't know.
Side of these admiralty court jurisdictions. That's the point. Now,
well, that doesn't exist on the land, though. The law of the land is Article 6.
It does, but we can discuss this at another time and place. I just wanted to clarify that those people that have properly done their private trust have every right to do those things.
They can do whatever they please, but don't attach our name to it because you put us all in jeopardy. Okay, because those people, whether you believe it or not, are going to go to jail because they're not going to let you play in their sandbox. Don't you understand that? Look what they did to Rod Class. Then they didn't let him play. They told him. They told Rod. Rod, you're right. You're right.
No,
but if you think you're going to get your way, forget about it. You're not going to have it. We're not going to let you. It's our sandbox.
He did not file properly his private trust ending. Right. Okay.
I know he didn't get involved in that part, but I'm talking about how they act in the judiciary, how they control the courts, how they say, Rod,
John,
you are right. Hold it. Rod had great arguments. No, hold it. Rod had great arguments. I was amazed at some of the arguments, and I hadn't picked them up until he spoke about them, and I said, wow, you know, he's absolutely right here. But let me tell you, but he lost anyway because they said to him, we can't let you win. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the point that I'm trying to make, if you think these evil people are going to allow you to make money in their system, I got a bridge in Brooklyn for you. That's all I'm saying to you. I really believe that. They're not going to let you have it.
Time, John, because there's other questions coming up. The NLA is doing a beautiful job in returning knowledge and education to stand on our unalienable rights. That's what's supposed to be here. It should never have been lost, and that's what we're here educating people to bring back.
All right, I think we've been on it too long. I think we need to move on because we have
more
calls.
Let's
move
on.
I'm gonna get off the call though. I'm gonna listen in, but Gerard should be handling this. I know what you're talking about. I know. You should have muted me. What's wrong
with
you? I'm muting myself. It's too late. Forget about it.
Okay, Sarah, we'll talk later.
Everybody. I've been working like 3 nights in a row, 6 hours or less sleep, doing all these telephones and emails and faxes for the paperwork coming. So.
Right.
You know, we're all working hard. I'm just going to put a call out to everybody else. Please call your district or state coordinators if they need help with a section of the list, because we're going to have to start making phone calls to these offices because they're not listing the fax and the email. They're listing either the fax or just the email.
Yeah.
It's crazy because I think all these retail stores have better customer service contact numbers than our public servants do. And to me, that's outrageous. So.
Okay. I see. Thank you very much, Sarah.
Godspeed, everybody.
Okay, I'm going to move to the next question now. Right. I don't know if I missed something. You said the dog was barking here, and I had to mute myself, but we'll move on.
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, wireless caller 706. Give me your name and your state.
Yeah, my name is Brian. I'm in Alaska.
Okay.
And I have a question about the – I have two questions, actually. One is on the – writ mandamus on page 6 of 14, it mentions about applying an unlawful direct tax. It mentions the Social Security Act.
Mm-hmm.
And from everything I've been learning and studying the last couple of years, it's the Social Security, Medicare, and the federal income tax are all an indirect tax, more specifically an excise. And I was wondering if you could look into that a little bit more and maybe rephrase it to reflect that it's a misapplied indirect tax.
Yeah, that thing has been attacked from all different directions. I mean, I think that's what Schiff went to jail with on, you know, for claiming that they were misapplying it. But, you know, it's all, again, it's all part of that fiction that whole Title 26 is really not law. You know what I mean? It was never
right.
It was never done right. So it's more of the same baloney. And they've robbed the system. That's the shame, because people that have paid into this thing for years and years and years, I'm never going to get out of it what I could have got out of it. And I mean, look, I would have been better off if my money was put into some kind of a private insurance fund. You know, even if they said I had to do it, you know, instead of them giving it away to everybody that came in. So I don't know where that's all going to go, but I know that when we get under common law, there will be no income. The income tax will have to go away. It's not necessary. It was, look, a graduated income tax is one of the platforms of the Communist Manifesto. Karl Marx said, you want to take over a country, one of his 10 things was a graduated income tax, and that's exactly what we have. And it's an evil thing, you know. And I mean, you can get into all the language, all the voodoo they do with the language about who's subject to the tax and all that baloney, you know what I mean? But they've gotten to the point that, you know, years ago you could go in and do those word things and some people would win, but they keep closing those loopholes all the time, you know. And the judges have gotten to the point that they're just arrogant, you know. You could stick it in their face, and they won't, you know, do the right thing. Just like we heard tonight with the bank. They said if the bank doesn't show up, the judge said he wasn't going to rule for them. Well, look, when they don't show up, look, what would it be if you didn't show up for your court? They hold you in contempt and they rule against you. So, you know, here's a judge that ruled for the banks that weren't even there. I had a case. The lawyer never showed up and the judge ruled for the lawyer. I mean, come on. These are their own court rules they're not following. So it's just more of the same baloney going on. And I don't know how we're going to fix Social Security, but look, if we get interest-free money, if we can put in interest-free money the way it was intended to, everything will go away. We will have wealth back. We will have income back. We'll be able to fix the soil. Look at it. And people that have paid in for 40 years, 50 years, they have to be paid. That has to come out of something. And you can't tell me that the greatest economic country in the world, that when we get up and running again, that we can't fix that system. Even if it is to close it down and pay those people off and put something better in and let them go with a private system. So that's all I can say about that. So would that answer your question?
Yes. And then my second question is, Alaska has no elected sheriff, and I have not read the Alaskan Constitution to see what it has to say about elected sheriffs, but what would be the process for getting elected sheriffs in Alaska?
Well, I know John did research on the Alaska Constitution, and I don't know exactly what I don't think that they have a provision in the Constitution. But it is a constitutional position, so they just have to instate it. You know, that's going to be up to the people to demand that, especially if we get in the court with the common law grand jury. Look at, when you get in the court, that's an indictment of the system and of the people, you know, of the ones that are running it, the legislatures and stuff. It has to be put in, and it's up to the people to put it in. So the best thing is, you know, when we get in the courts, all these misuses need to be fixed. Now, I don't know if there's something you can do in Alaska on a local level. Like I just said to that guy, start electing sheriffs at the town level. You know what I mean? If they don't have a county government seat, you know what I mean? So, you know, they seem to think that, and I don't know Alaska specifically, but like a lot of these states, you know, they leave it up to the legislators as the will of the people, and that's who took it out or wrote it in. So I don't know specifically how, if I think Alaska, because it was territories and things like that, they had different police force. They were under the federal government a lot. And so they were probably never there to begin with. So you can't go back to anything in Alaska's history. You just have to go by the full faith and credit, like what Rod Glass say, what's available to one state, available to the next. And I think that's how you would have to go about putting it back in, that it's a constitutional leg of common law. It's a common law leg. The stool doesn't stand without three legs, and it needs to be put back in. And it would be very easy for them to write it in, you know, to require the legislatures and the Senate to put that in as an addendum or whatever to their constitution. And I don't even think they have to do it, because it is a common law right. All they got to do is set up an election and set up a district and vote the sheriff in. Boom, done. You know? So, and I don't know. You know, Alaska might be easier, because look, you're very sparsely populated, so you don't need that many people to come together to push a bill through a house or something. You know what I mean? You know, it's hard because you're so sparse, but it takes less people if you can get a movement started to push things through. You should be pushing this grand jury thing through, because the grand jury is the people speaking. So the people will be able to get together and require them to put the constitutional, the elected sheriff back in, you know, or institute it. And I can't even say back in, because they never had that there. But look, Alaska's a state.
3 minutes.
And it shouldn't be run by the federal government. All right, I'm gonna move to the next question. I think we've beat that one up. Next caller, 509, wireless caller, name and state. 509, last number is 7337. Oh, they're not answering. I'm going to go look at we got Verma Fisher. What? Really quick, what do you got?
Gerard?
Yes.
This is Ohio Mike.
Okay.
I need some assistance with something. I made a small mistake with my post office box number. The first day I purchased the post office box, the post office number that was on my receipt was the wrong number. They printed on there, and when I sent you the email to give you my post office box, I gave you the wrong number.
Call Gary. He'll take care of it.
Okay. Yeah, that way you can make that change so you can make sure you get the mail.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. We're gonna be. There's nobody else in the queue.
Yep. We've come to the end of our program. 2 minutes. We'll shut down 2 minutes early. Okay. We appreciate everyone coming. We had some lively conversations here. I think we shared a lot of information. Please, when you get a chance, go out and read these two papers and really get to understand what it is we're doing. And let's work with our coordinators, district coordinators and state coordinators, in order to get the job done. Let's save America. We'd like to get these papers done within the next 4 to 6 weeks. Let's say 6 weeks. Let's get this done. I don't think we have much time. Once we get past that six-week mark and we get all of these papers in, if we can accomplish that, get all these papers in, believe me, we're going to be in a very, very good position, and we have other things to do at the same time. But it's going to put us into a really good position. Okay, with that, we're going to end the evening. We're going to go out with a song. Again, the main reason for the songs is really to give 5 minutes before and 5 minutes later for whatever, you know, the radio stations might want to do. I don't know if they want to listen to our music or do something else during that time period. But with that, Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Thanks for coming. Good night.